Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 92 for June 4th, 2008. Thundercats. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by Drobo, the intelligent automated data storage device. To learn more and receive an instant $50 off your own Drobo, visit drobo.com/MacBreak. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. This is MacBreak Weekly, ladies and gentlemen, the show that brings you everything you'd ever want to know about Macintoshes and probably a little bit more. I'm Leo Laporte, your friendly host, and joining us on the call today, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Merlin, Truck Spank Man.
Truck Spank. I've been going with Pony Boy. That's my new latte name.
Pony Boy.
Or Curtis.
If you haven't heard Merlin's podcast, You Look Nice Today, go to youlooknicetoday.com and listen to the current episode, Truck Spank. Mm-hmm. But don't delay, because it's pretty quickly becoming the podcast that if you didn't hear the last 10 episodes, you really aren't going to follow it. You're not going to know what's going on.
I can't follow it, and I do it. Apparently a lot of things that get recorded that I don't remember saying.
It's adults only, but I'll tell you, I was listening this morning at breakfast, and my wife started listening, and she couldn't stop. I mean, she started laughing and just couldn't stop. She loved it.
You got a good one there, Leo.
It was a great, great show. You Look Nice Today. Also here, Andy Yanako of The Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, and he's also a regular on the Apple Phone Show and many other fine programs. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. Now, Merlin, if people go to your regular strip club and ask for Pony Boy, are they going to get the old Pony Boy, or are they going to get you?
My strip club?
Yeah. Have we started yet?
Yes.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
I would roll tape, Leo.
Wow. Okay, let me just switch that off.
Rewind.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corpse.
Hello.
Who is about to move to my neck of the woods, I think. That's the weirdest thing ever.
We've been looking, and now that as soon as you have a kid, sometimes you decide that San Francisco is not the place for you. And yes. So it's not really the kid town, you know. And and so we have a list.
You're talking to Merlin Mann, who's living there with his child. Just
did you ever notice, Alex? You only see infants and teenagers. Have you ever noticed that? There's no 7-year-old kids in this town.
There's a gap. There's a gap where a whole bunch of people decided that this just wasn't going
to
work.
Send them to Tiburon or something. I don't know where they go, but you don't see elementary school age kids here. It's extraordinary.
It is. It's very odd. Maybe they come back. They bring their kids back once they've gotten over the certain age. And there might be some hidden law. You mean?
Might be a camp.
San Francisco's full of a law. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, just bust them out, you know? And so, we've been looking at, you know, Santa Fe and Albuquerque, Austin, Portland, and a couple of places that we could possibly be. And so I figured, you know, Petaluma is really nice for a lot of reasons. I mean, you know,
well, the irony is you came up with Carlita, your wife, on Sunday, and by yesterday I'm getting emails with houses you're going to be looking at tomorrow.
Well, she's going to be looking at them. You know, the thing is that once Carlita gets going, I just try to keep my hands and feet away from
them. I have to tell you, this is how we moved up here, though. We had a 1-year-old, and we wanted to buy a house. You're probably not going to buy, but we wanted to
not
buy
immediately.
A house. Yeah. And although this is, probably a good time to buy. And so we came, we started driving north because you can't afford a house in San Francisco. Then you get to Marin, you can't afford, you know, Tiburon, Sausalito, San Rafael, you can't afford a house there. And so we just kept going north till we could afford a house. And that's how we ended up here. But you know what? This is a great place to raise kids. I've been very happy here.
Yeah. So we came up to wander around and we did that. And then before I know it, yeah, she's sending me these lists from Craigslist. And so she's going to be looking at houses to either buy or rent for a short period of time so she can feel it out.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
You know, if we're going to spend a bunch of money, I'd kind of like to sitting there for a little while.
Yeah, get to know it first. Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea.
So it's a great mix of between the art side of the art side that she likes and kind of more of the hick side that I like.
Well, and you could just come right over here. You need a TV studio? We got it. We're ready.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so we are definitely spending more time in Petaluma.
So that's the panel. I'm trying to get Scott Bourne. He's not. He was going to be here, and I probably threw him because we were thinking of doing this via iChat. We may still next time because I want to get video of you guys for the live portion of the show. But anyway, we don't have video. You'll just have to imagine Merlin and his.
I trimmed my nose hair just for this event.
I know. I'm sorry. Did you go back to the Dunce Cap Lab, or are you at your mom's?
I'm at mom's house. I'm actually now at mom's house, Studio C, because it's raining outside. So this we had one of those like folk rock bands in, so we got the echo panels down. So we might have a little bit of rattle and hum here. But
sounds good. You know, I like it.
It'll give you that tube analog feel to it.
Well, like it. Since my baby left me, I found a new place to
dream. Leo, can you still add the birds in post?
Yes. Well, we've been doing that for the last four shows. I mean, never mind. Actually, Andy's also looking for new housing, as we mentioned last week, and it sounds like you found somewhere where you could actually do the show from the forest.
Yes. I'm bringing all kinds of different technology to this. One of them was to basically put up a floor plan of what I was looking for on Flickr, because I got a whole bunch of followers on Flickr. And also, I have like several thousand people following me on Twitter, basically saying, if you've got any ideas, let me know. I got a lead on this place that happens to be right across the street from a 50-acre nature reserve and park. And I took a look at the place last weekend. It's a really nice place. And I'm looking at the apartment. I'm thinking, you know what? If I put an antenna on this corner of the house, I've got clear line of sight all the way to the tree line, all the way over there. And so we could start. It could be like Uncle Andy and his Woodlands friends talk about XML.
Oh, you're making people so excited, Andy. Can't wait. And he called it a Twitter apartment.
You have to delete vowels in order to be Web 2.0. You know?
Means you can't access it most of the time, or
yeah, it's mostly down.
No, I say that because I love. I say that out of love. But you gotta make
well,
that's actually,
no, it is well. It is very that is a very appropriate thing for real estate because once I get like my plateau funding, I'll be able to move on to the next phase of living, which is getting a real house. But I'm doing this apartment as a proof of concept to prove that I can be trusted with a 4, 5, 6 bedroom.
I mean, that's why you made it out of rails. It was easy to get it up quick.
Exactly. And it's open source. Now, of course, you have to really nail those doors shut because if there's an open port anywhere in the house, you know, they're going to find it. All these script kiddies.
Well, you got to restart the web brick. And, you know, I have for a while I had a house made out of flash, but it was just taking too long to live.
But it was pretty.
You're just tired of, you know, wanting to settle down on the sofa, but there's like a big missing puzzle piece icon where the sofa used to be, you know.
TV just says skip intro.
That's no way to live.
I'm living in the cloud and I find it wonderful. Let's move on to our top stories. And actually, before we began, Merlin asked for the lowdown on the iPhone. And of course, we're now 1 week away. I think what we're going to do, are you going to be going to the WWDC keynote, Alex Lindsay?
You know, no one sent me an invitation yet, but I'll
let me see if I can get you in because yeah, I can't leave this chair anymore. Oh. I'm actually physically glued into it.
It's on Monday morning, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
are you like Raymond Burr in Ironside?
Yeah, I am.
It's more like that person who like didn't leave the toilet for 2 years and had to be basically uprooted.
Read about that.
I can't move, and but I'm very comfortable. So
I've got a rag on a stick for all my sanitary needs.
Well, I was thinking.
Or remember, everybody, the video version of this starts next week. You'll be able to see me with my rag on the stick.
I'm comfortable.
I've got a padded seat. So I was thinking that since Andy can't get to the conference and I can't get to the conference, maybe, you know, and last time he did this great couch version of the keynote. And I thought maybe he could do the couch keynote on Twit Live. So and I actually asked you, Merlin, but I guess it's too early in the morning for you. I don't know. So but you're welcome to join us. So 10 o'clock on Monday.
I was live streaming for a while, but I went to a really good doctor, and now I can hold it for as long as an hour at a time.
You know, it's funny how many, you know, I just assume that anybody who does these shows with me is completely open to the notion of perhaps, you know, putting their life online, and it turns out that's not the case.
I think with the help of an editor. And I can make my life interesting, but without an editor, I'm not very interesting.
Oh, ye of little faith. I think you're plenty interesting, but anyway, and that's what we have camera angles for anyway. So just to keep it interesting. And I've got all sorts of transitions, you know, dissolves. Yeah. So we can do all sorts
take away beards. Can you live stream?
I could
all
do anything. I could put you in a double box, triple box. But anyway, 10 o'clock, I guess the keynote begins 10 o'clock Pacific, which is 1 PM Eastern time. And that's 1700 UTC. So Andy and I will kind of gather to do this live. What we'll do is we'll do like everybody else is doing. We'll be refreshing Engadget. Unless we come up with a better way. I don't know what a better way would be.
I can figure it out some way. I can.
Well, if you could live blog it from the conference, right. That would be great. Right. Alex.
Well, I'll find out if we can get in.
Well, we'll try to get you in. I'll send an email out to Apple today. Maybe you and Scott could go. And then so Andy and I will kind of hold down the fort during the conference. And then after the conference, you could join us and give us your analysis. So Monday, we're going to do a special Mac Break Weekly. And that will be for the WWDC keynote. And I think everybody expects that at the very least, we'll see a new iPhone, right?
Yes. I think we would all be painfully surprised and dismayed and, you know, suicidal, I think.
One analyst, probably because, you know, it's a long shot, but if he got it right, he'd become famous, said, no, it's not going to be an iPhone. They're not going to announce a new iPhone.
Wow, it'd be really painful for Apple, I think.
At this point, the expectations are so high.
The expectation is...
Do you have to have male answer syndrome in order to have a blog nowadays?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's still okay to say, I don't know.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yep. Or null.
No.
Say null.
No, you can never say, I don't know.
I kind of want to stick to my guns and think that they're going to show it on Monday, but they're not going to release it on Monday. But I'm seeing more signs in the past week than I have in the past month that there's going to be a release on Monday. But it still just doesn't it make more sense to have it on its own event rather than this would be a good place for Apple to announce that actually they've been using sham billing to inflate the stock price. They actually have $18 in the bank. They'll be out of business in 4 months' time because if they follow that with a demonstration of the shiny new iPhone, no one will ever remember whatever was said before it.
We haven't sold an iPod in 6 months. It's all a sham.
We've been selling Hostess Pop-Tarts in every single box.
I think that's a reasonable guess.
We've doubled the number of stickers in every box, so people haven't complained yet, but hey, that's going to bite us in the butt soon enough.
The real question, we know AT&T employees have been told to no vacations starting next week. There's those mysterious new containers coming across the ocean. I've heard from a number of people who have contacts at these Chinese and Japanese, well, I guess they're all Chinese companies that make electronics for the Apple company, and they're telling me, oh, you know, they're those iPhones are in the country. So I think it's very likely we'll be able to get them pretty quick, like maybe even Monday, which would be pretty cool. The real question to me is, will there be anything else? Well, Andy, will you think there's any, you're the one who's been lobbying for this tablet.
I think it's definitely not.
There's no chance in hell that there's going to be a tablet.
Okay. Really?
Fast forward to next week when we say, hey, look, everyone's enjoying the new Apple tablet. The thing is, that would be something that they would release. If they were going to release it in 2008, that would happen in November when it's time to start selling stuff for Christmas. This is not a time to do anything that could sabotage the sales of a 3G iPhone because this is the time when they're trying to bring in all the people who wanted to buy an iPhone last year, but were scared off for one reason or another, one of them being lack of 3G.
Right.
And if you basically tell them that, well, here's an option. So please, if you had the $500 in your pocket for the 3G iPhone, consider spending it on the $599, iPod Touch tablet instead.
Or what if it's a $799 big iPhone?
Well, let's make it like a 3DBB on the Colonel Whoopi's tablet. Just keep unfolding and unfolding until you actually walk through. I'm also not convinced that at this point they would know how exactly they want to market it and how they want to sell it. This would be a great thing to show off in January when it's time to really dazzle people with something that they're not expecting and not really waiting to see. They also need the time to get all the infrastructure for the application development ramped up even further. Right now, people are designing for these small screens. They need to find a way to tell people how to design for these larger screens. As we've seen with the rollout for the development kit for the iPhone, Apple's willing to show its cards when it comes time to preparing all the developers for what they need to do. As yet, they have yet to show any demonstration of what a large screen iPhone touch application would work. So that's another reason why I just don't think it's fun to speculate, but that's absolutely not on the boards. What I find so funny about all the speculation is that at this point, even like tech blogs, even, you know, respected tech blogs are making announcements as though it's a given. I mean, it's a given there's going to be a 3G iPhone. We can be safe about that. But a lot of people think that it's a given that's going to have GPS, that's a given that's going to have a different kind of 3G radio than we all think it's going to have, and all this other sort of stuff. I think the only given is a 3G iPhone sometime in June. I just don't see any numbers or any evidence that people are producing to say that they know that there's going to be a GPS in there, for instance.
What about, here's a rumor that's been flying around, and I give credit probably on this to John Gruber and others, Mobile Me. This is the idea that they're going to rebrand .Mac and call it Mobile Me.
Yeah, a lot of that comes simply from DNS filings and basically seeing which domain names have been registered and what Apple is doing with it. There is also there must be an order of monks out there who, just like, you know, and 500 years ago, they were willing to spend thousands of man hours per week illuminating manuscripts. These people are willing to go byte by byte by byte, do a hex dump of every single piece of code that Apple releases to find some sort of word that might tip things off. The thing that they've figured out is that all references to .Mac in Apple software have been replaced, not necessarily with, you know, the me service, but basically with a placeholder, so that on the fly, Apple can simply push a simple update that simply says, replace this random token we've inserted with me service or, you know, or whatever, sponge or whatever they want to call this new thing. So that's definitely interesting, but it's also the sort of thing where it's a very consumer sort of service. And do they really want to make that announcement at WWDC? Everyone's expecting an iPhone announcement. If there is an iPhone announcement, is anybody going to pay attention to this on Monday?
Well, the one thing to think about is if I'm no expert on Steve Jobs, but it seems to me that Steve Jobs is not a guy who's going to go, guess what? Thing you kind of already knew, 3G, without going, and here's how you're going to use it.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you 3G, and you're going to need it, because now you're going to be pulling down this amazing stuff. You know what? You don't need a Mac to do this. That's why we changed the name.
What would be new in Mobile Me, Merlin, to make that name make sense and to make Steve be saying something of importance?
Well, I'll be that guy and reference something we talked about a while back in a post that I wrote talking about the possibilities of .Mac that haven't been tapped. And I think, you know, I don't know anything about any of this stuff. All I know is what I read from John Gruber on the gray. but oh no, what I would say is if they put me in charge of that or brought me in with a whiteboard and said, tell us what to make, I would say, you know, bandwidth or no bandwidth, I think what you need to do is I think wireless syncing would be great. I think having more ways to be able to kind of like wireless.
That makes sense with an iPhone, sure, especially if you have high speed.
And any kind of service where if we do get any of this location-based stuff that people talk about, it would be pretty neat to figure out ways to leverage that. We talked before about advertising, but I think there's a lot more to it than that. Did you notice, Andy? I don't know if you saw this, just a short rat hole, but that wonderful reverse engineering site, I think it's called Reverse Engineering, reverseeverything.com, I think, has a great series on the Kindle. And there's an undocumented feature in the Kindle where you can hit a button. It's not working right now, but there's an undocumented key command you can hit, and it'll find nearby gas stations.
Yeah, very much. I've used that. It's really cool. Yeah.
Very much the kind of thing that I was talking with Scott about a couple weeks ago. Anyway, long story short, I think what they do is they take the baby steps toward making .Mac the center of your digital world. That's my fantasy anyway. Yeah. And I see that being starting with, I don't have to sync my contacts over a wire.
And there would also be
basically some kind of one last thing, just some way to have this is so simple and probably so hard because syncing's hard to begin with. But somewhere in my .Mac, my iDisk area, where I could put stuff that would get onto the phone without having to sync.
A special folder that says iPhone.
Something somehow that lets me. For me, and maybe I'm being Alex here, and I'm telling you what I want rather than what the world's going to get. But I would love to have my little folder of text files available on the phone. That would be so huge for me. So anyway, I guess I think it's going to be something that takes the iPhone and makes it something that a normal, even non-Apple lover starts seeing as a way to think of Apple as being in this kind of web business for the first time in a long time.
Well, for our iPhone users out there, there's already a way to do that. If you get a subscription to box.net, you can actually just have, it has a really nice iPhone interface. So you can have just a folder on your desktop. And every time you drag, every time you drag a PDF, drag any file that is compatible with the iPhone browser. And if you've bookmarked your box in the iPhone. You just tap it. Here's a list of all your files. Tap on the file and you can actually start reading it. That's one of the many tidbits available in iPhone Fully Loaded by Andy Anatko. Available at popular prices at Amazon and other places. But yeah, I mean, I've always, I'm now at the point where I have to sort of compress these long screeds into one sentence. I've always said that .Mac's best implementation would be a way to project my experience from whatever computer is my main computer into any electronic device that I have. So if they were to do that, I'm thinking of if the iPhone does have GPS, and if one part of this initiative is to make sure that every computer has a sense of where it was, that is also a really good tweak for security. If I'm standing in front of just a random Mac at the Apple store, I've always imagined this sort of thing working as where the iPhone would identify me simply by Bluetooth. But if it could simply say, okay, if iMac had the ability to, you know, ask .Mac, okay, there's this guy who's claiming he's Andy Anatko and he's claiming that he wants me to use back to my Mac from this terminal. Should I trust him? .Mac and say, yeah, actually Andy Anatko's GPS says that he's about 2 feet away from you right now. So at least unless he's stolen his iPhone and knows his password, then I'm guessing you can trust him.
Anything
interesting to do that?
Anything else we're going to hear on Monday? I know we've asked this now every show for the last 3 weeks.
There are a bunch of stuff. One of the more interesting things is non-technical in nature. I've heard a rumor that Apple is going to start offering incentives on the iPhone to new subscribers, where you can get $100 off with a contract. You can get $200 off with a contract, which is interesting because, as you know, they're having trouble moving these things. Sort of twist people's arm, you know, because there's a Motorola with a camera phone and Java, you know, that's available at the AT&T store.
For $59. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. So
Laptop Magazine declares Steve Jobs the second most influential man in mobile technology.
And you're talking to number one, baby. Yeah, no, sorry,
after,
Steve.
After God.
Well, number one is Dan Hesse.
No, me.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Who? Dan Hesse, he's the
citation needed.
Yeah, this is Laptop Mobile Solutions for Business and Life magazine. Dan Hesse is the CEO of Sprint Nextel. So I guess you could argue, I don't know.
Are you kidding me? Because of Evdo?
I don't know.
I think, you know, probably because of their sterling customer service.
I think it's WiMAX that they call. By the way,
recently upgraded to a board with a nail in it that they hit you on the head with.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Sprint.
It's spelled WiMAX, but they pronounce it Zohm.
Zohm?
XOHM is what they call their WiMAX. Mm. So I guess he's influential because he was able to change the spelling. I don't know. Seems like Steve Jobs really deserves this title.
He seems to be scaring the most number of people.
Yeah. You think Sprint is more important right now in mobile technology than Apple?
So where does that come from? Sprint as what? They're not the biggest. They're not.
It's
the
WiMAX. It's their push on WiMAX, I think, according to the article. That's what is significant. And you know, WiMAX could be very important. We keep talking all about a 3G iPhone, but as long as Apple's tied to AT&T, 3G means HSDPA. It means it's not available to more than half of the country. It's not a breakthrough technology, whereas WiMAX is coming on very fast, very strong. You're seeing laptops and other small devices being built in with WiMAX. There are a number of Asus EPC size, you know, these new mini PCs with WiMAX built in. I think WiMAX, if they can roll it out, if they can do what they want to do, it could actually replace, it could be 4G, 4th G. In other words, 3G might be a little too late.
Well, even beyond just any one specific technology, it's easy. I mean, it's easy for us to get dazzled by the fact that we love the iPhone, we love the iPod, we love, you know, gadgets and technology. It makes it very easy to forget how important the infrastructure that drives not just the iPhone, but the BlackBerry and every other technology works. I mean, the plumber is the most important service guy you call. If you call one guy in three years, the one guy you hope answers the call immediately and can come in within a half hour is the person who fixes that awful, awful problem you're having with your sewage system.
Yeah, although I have to point out, iPhone's market share is actually not that impressive. 19.2% in the first quarter of 2008. That's down from 26.7% of all smartphones sold in the fourth quarter. And the big gainer, BlackBerry from RIM. It's gone up from 35% of the market to 44.5%. So 19% for the iPhone, 44.5% of the market of sales for the BlackBerry. BlackBerry is the one to beat right now. In fact, if I'm Apple, I'm, you know, and it's funny because at the last iPhone announcements, Steve, I think, was very careful to say we're not taking on BlackBerry. But when you say we're going to support Exchange Server, we're going to, you know, support, you know, BlackBerry style push email in the corporation, we're going to support Outlook, it sure looks like they're taking on BlackBerry. And frankly, that's the market.
Well, I think part of it also... Part of the smaller
go ahead, Alex, and then we'll then
but part of the thing is though is that remember we have the AT&T CEO saying that 3G is coming and
so that slowed sales, you think?
So for 6 months we've been waiting, people have been waiting for 3G. You know, I think you got a big push, but I think you have a lot of people that, why would you buy a phone if you knew that a better phone was right around the corner? You know, or some people have decided that that's fine, obviously a lot of them, but I think that I think we're probably going to see a huge spike over the summer. If indeed we get a phone next week, you know, I think you're going to end up with about half of the people who own an iPhone buying a new iPhone, you know, just to upgrade. I know I have a chunk of my credit card just waiting to just.
I've decided that out of my noblesse oblige, my largesse toward my wonderful wife, I would love for her to have an iPhone. So to make that
aren't
happen,
aren't you a generous one?
Specifically, I'm a good.
Specifically,
a good
you'd love her to have your old iPhone.
You know, Andy, that's a great idea.
Hey, that's thinking.
As Merlin, as an expert and the author of the best-selling iPhone Fully Loaded,
what's
available at
attractive prices. Is it prices. iPhone Fully Loaded? Is that the name?
iPhone Fully Loaded. As an expert, I advise you to buy three.
Yes,
really.
One for the car, one for the boat. You might need to buy a boat so you can have one for the boat.
Monocle Pete's boat wax is expensive.
My massive yacht.
Yeah,
there you go. What I was going to say is that the iPhone is this is probably the first year that it's really going to be fighting a much tougher battle, because remember that there are people who are lined up for 6 months, metaphorically speaking, to buy the iPhone as soon as it came out. Also, for an entire year, it was the only thing even remotely like an iPhone out there. And every single sneak peek of new hardware that I see from every single major phone company has taken, they're not ripoffs of the iPhone, but they take the lessons that they learned of what people like. There are phones with huge, really nice screens that do video really well. There are phones that have real web browsers that don't need to have a unique web experience. It doesn't have to limit to a mobile web experience. You even have touch interface, not as well as the iPhone does it, but at least it takes away the killer feature of a touch interface on the iPhone, which is the ability to have soft buttons, soft features that can reconfigure for the media application, for the browser application, for the mail application. So we're going to start seeing how much of the excitement for the iPhone is because the iPhone is a really good, really well-engineered, really thought-out product, and how much of that excitement is just for these 4, 5, 6 features that didn't exist before the iPhone came out.
Yeah, I mean have we used any of those other phones, and did we really think that they were good? I mean, that's I go in and I play with them, and then I just go, oh, this
you mean the iPhone clones?
Yeah, every other phone that I walk
in. I use a BlackBerry, and I far prefer it to the iPhone, and I've been using it ever since I traded in the iPhone for the BlackBerry.
Yeah, and there are a couple of models I can't talk about that again. You think about how close If you have an iPhone-ness scale, just like the Mohs scale of hardness, you know, how close to iPhone-ness does it have to be to get people to say, you know what, this is close enough for me. Also, I like the idea of having a slide-out mechanical keyboard.
I do
this
like
is gonna
that.
Be my,
yeah.
And there are at least two or three that, again, they don't have the sort of experience that I want to have, because it turns out that the iPhone is just about perfect for what I want. But I could see a lot of people making that decision and thinking, you know what, I've looked at both of these phones. I don't see that much of a difference for what I want a phone to be. This one is $149. This one is $399. I'm going to walk out of here with some more money in my pocket.
Another story that is gaining some traction about WWDC is what they call Snow Leopard. OS 10 10.6, the first preview, according to the ultimate Apple weblog, TUAW.com. Apple may be working to seed developers with an early build of 10.6 at this year's conference. Not any significant new features, unlike Leopard, but Apple is focusing solely on stability and security.
Stability would be great.
Just stability would be a good start.
You know, I'm not worried about security right now, but the craziness that I love Leopard. It's better than anything I've used before. But there have been some crazy freezes and stuff. I mean, this is the most unstable computer I've ever had.
According to TUAW source, it will be a fully 64-bit clean Intel only OS 10. So no,
I think they've been moving that direction for a while. I mean, yeah. we've had a lot of bugs. We're ending up with bugs with like Apple ProRes and other things that are only occurring on the PowerPC, the handful of PowerPC computers we still have here. And so, you know, the Intel ones are fine.
Right.
So we have to actually view stuff and work on some stuff only on the Intel. So I think that's kind of a process that's already in the works.
I guess if you leave behind PowerPC. You can stop doing universal builds.
Right.
At some point.
That's got to increase stability in some ways.
So they have a poll on the site. What will 10.6 be named? They've kind of run out. I'll be honest, they've kind of run out of big cats. So they're suggesting perhaps Garfield, Snow Leopard, Lynx, Lion, Felix, Cougar. I don't think Cougar is going to work. Civet.
Has there been a Puma?
Has there been a yes, I believe the first OS 10 was Puma, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
10 or 10.1 was Puma. How about
Lynx,
another early one, wasn't it?
Lynx, yeah, I think Lynx is done.
Civet.
Civet. 10.2 with Panther, 10.0, yeah.
Is a civet a feline?
Is that cat that eats the coffee beans and then is done with the coffee beans. Yes.
Well, a civet's also used in perfumes. A civet, civet's secretions.
As a substitute for whale vomit.
Yeah.
This is why you're a pro, Leo. This is why you're a pro.
Well, you've got your ambergris.
You're able to tone it down. You know, but then you know how to turn it down. You take it and you turn it. And I admire that.
So anyway, they do need a name. Gruber's using Snow Leopard. I think that's not going to work.
Meh.
No. Nah. Although they're very beautiful snow leopards.
I think Bagheera.
Bagheera?
Bagheera.
Isn't that the cat from...
Kipling from...
I liked your Ricky Tikki Tavi Twitter, by the way. he's gone a Kipling route here. I don't...
Yeah, I like... Well, I'm in a Kipling... I just woke up on a Kipling side of the bed.
He's one of my favorite writers, it sounds like, a gerund.
Kipling. I've been Kipling all morning. There's nothing better than eggs and Kiplings for breakfast.
Yeah, there's like a really old joke about that, and the punchline is, "Oh, dear gentleman, how did you know that I kippled?" This is hard. This is hard work. You gotta really look stuff up on Wikipedia.
I think you're gonna see a lot of like routine complaints, suggestions, and complaints saying, obviously, you've not played a D20 edition of Dungeons and Dragons. If you did, you would realize that a squivern is a half cat, half lynx, half chimera. It has a +20 ability of charisma. It has a.
Somebody, Mr. Chin. In the chat room is suggesting, I think, a good one, Sabretooth. Yeah.
Sabretooth. That's a kind of tiger.
Yeah, well, it's a big cat. It's an extinct big cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
good. So I think something from the Fiend Folio would be kind of badass.
Yeah.
Fiend Folio. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. The Monster Manual 2 has some.
It's a D&D thing, Leo. You wouldn't understand.
I guess not.
Okay, I've picked my name.
What's your name?
I picked my name. In the future, until Apple declares a code name, it's going to be Catwoman.
I was going to say that. I was going to say Selena. Everybody, that's what I thought that was too nerdy.
I'm talking about like the current run of Catwoman, not like the from the Michelle Pfeiffer movie, not from anything like that. We're talking about the one who's trained with Batman, has Wayne technology, you know,
just to be clear, though, you're not saying words against the Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman, though, right?
I'm going to say the following words against the Michelle Pfeiffer Batwoman, Catwoman. She's silly. She doesn't have the sort of combat edge. She's frilly. She's fuffy.
You know, she's really cute. She's squeaky.
She was directed by Joel Schumacher, which I think closes the entire argument. I don't think I need to say another word after saying she was directed by Joel Schumacher.
No, I don't think you do either. She squeaks when she walks. You understand? She's adorable. She's adorable.
She squeaks when she walks? What does that mean exactly?
The costume is made out of vinyl raincoat. She leaves herself open to ambush.
No, you're right. There's a lot of problems. And I think the shoes don't work. That just doesn't make sense. It's not practical.
The current Batwoman wears big combat boots. Good for kicking.
Selina Kyle, is that her name? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Leo,
unfortunately,
you want to go ahead and cue the music?
I don't know where to go here. I'm completely at sea. I don't. Have we come up with a name, or did I miss that? Did we actually come up with a name? No.
Catwoman.
No, we have no idea.
We've decided. Yeah, Wikipedia, it becomes true.
I wish. I missed.
Rat hole. Thank you.
I missed the beginning part where you said what the version was. This is going to be
10.6.
For real? They're saying at WWDC, we're going to see a 10.6?
No, we're going to see the first developer seeds. It won't come out till next year.
I really hate looking at developer seeds.
How about Thundercats?
Thundercats, that's pretty good.
Thank you,
that's
Brian Lyle in the chat room. Thundercats, I like it. I think we've got a winner.
Oh, if it's named after a Thundercat, I'm starting to look seriously at Windows 7.
Okay. Let's see. What other stories do we have in the Mac world?
macOS Lion O, for God's sakes, we're starting to get some of our cool back. We would never live that down.
Australia getting its first Apple store in a couple of weeks, June 19th. The Sydney store opens. They are very excited in Australia. Apple has signed SoftBank, who actually used to own Ziff Davis, which means they used to own ZDTV. They're going to be the iPhone distributor in Japan. So this is there are only a few countries left. Japan was one. I think China was the other. They're in talks with China Mobile. Apple also recently signed Hutchison Telecom, a.k.a. 3, for Hong Kong and Macau. So they're pretty close to getting worldwide distribution for the iPhone, and that's going to help getting to your 10 million. Hello?
Yeah. Oh, no, hi.
Oh okay.
Hi,
it got very quiet in here. Hello?
Is this thing on?
Are you there? Sometimes Skype does that, just hangs up. And then sometimes I just, you know, put everybody to sleep. So I'm sometimes,
yeah, sometimes I do that, and I do that on the regular phone, and I find out it's been 15 minutes. And eventually I just say I haven't gotten a compliment in a while. And I say, are you there?
You haven't said anything nice about me lately.
I used to do that with my mother. You see, she'd be working away, and I'd be talking, and I would just stop talking mid sentence to make sure she was still on. You know, she was still listening. And if she didn't ask me what I said, I just would just leave.
So I've learned that John Maltz has a podcast. That's what's shocking me now.
He's a very very funny man.
Technology, Whiskey, Sexy.
His brand new podcast.
So we really must get him on the show.
I sent him, I deed him on the Twitter and told him of this potential offer.
Good. Because he's a podcaster now, so it's official. And I think he's very funny. I mean, after Lonely Sandwich, Hot Dogs Ladies, and Scott Simpson.
No, Lonely Sandwich would be another great one. He's the author of that amazing video of what copy and paste should look like on an iPhone. That was him.
Oh, that's neat.
So the video that went around.
He has some substance to him.
No, he's hardcore, and actually, him and Alex could totally hang. He just lives in Final Cut all day.
You know what? You know, I want to get the Deepak on from the circuit.
Deepak Chopra. Deepak Chopra
from the Mojo or whatever.
That is a funny show.
The only thing is that I think that if he was on with Merlin, I think that there may be kind of one of those.
It would just break down.
The whole thing would merge into some kind of...
I don't like being on a show with me, so... Can I bring up a potential? It sounds like you're looking for ideas here. Can I bring up... Did anybody try the 10.5.3 sync with Google deal with your address?
Wait a minute. It has a sync with Google in it?
This is a really big deal. I was really excited. I got the 10.5.3. It came up. I have not done a lot of due diligence about this, but I was excited because, okay, great. You know, Google's a little bit weird about like very promiscuously adding people to your contact book that you don't necessarily want in there. Like suddenly I discovered there's all these people who can see me online.
Is that because you've sent messages to them and so it just adds them thinking?
I think that's what it does. Yeah. I'm not sure. But
that's a Windows thing. So I'm looking at the sharing tab now on my address book. Does that mean I could share with Google?
Oh, well, yeah. Let me save you some trouble.
Uh-oh.
I'm just curious. First of all, Andy, anybody else? Did you guys try this yet?
No.
Hey, I got a really ugly, you know, the orange spinny sync thing for you .Mac users where it's going to try and match stuff up.
Yeah.
It was trying to add 600 contacts and got really confused and really bogged down. And now as I'm surfing around, I'm seeing here on Gizmodo, they had the headline, Apple and Google combine forces to explode your address book.
All right, I'm doing it right now. I don't care. Before you do it, back up first. Address book has a very easy, very handy...
Very easy, and you should do it. Like all backup, you should do it every time you think of it. Like,
yeah, because then you have these. Yeah, then you have these great dot. What is it?
ADU or yeah. ADR or something.
Yeah, and so you can always go back. So let me back up, and then I will try this. You know, I think anytime you sync with another system, it's gonna be a mess.
I remember one of the first attempts at this that I got very excited about was I used to actually be a big Yahoo Mail guy back in the early aughts, and I was really excited when they came out with a conduit that would sync your Palm contacts with your Yahoo contacts. And I was so excited because I was living in Yahoo. I'd really encouraged my entire team to start, you know, a little ahead of the curve, trying to use all of our calendaring, do it all on Yahoo, do everything in one place. And man, that's the first time I think I heard from somebody use the phrase syncing is hard. Because syncing is really, really hard.
It is hard. They should give you the option. They don't give you the option. I wish they did to say, I want to replace everything. You know, instead, it doesn't give you any options. It's just going to sync.
.Mac will do that. .Mac, I mean, this is the sub-nuclear option. The ultimate nuclear option, you don't even want to have me describe to
you. Well, I'm
going
to do Yahoo, too, because I can do Yahoo, too.
Well, if you're doing .Mac sync, you do have always the option of going to advanced in the preference pane and then saying
and
replace.
Blowing it out. Yes, and I've done that like 1,000 times.
Oh, no, it's become a hobby. It's like philately for me.
Explain what it is that you do, Merlin, so that people know.
Okay, so syncing is hard. That's step zero. Step one is if things get really messed up, let's say, for example, you're like me and you've got a third Mac that you don't use all that much, but then you do turn it on one day, like weird, capital W, capital S, weird stuff will happen. Right. And you get a lot of challenges. You can get the dreaded three column panel where you have to sync between three different
sources. Yes.
That's when you know, like, there's a really
something
good chance
bad has happened.
You might want to, at that point, restore from your best copy. So what I would suggest is whatever your primary Mac is, do you make a point of however you do that, Mosey or what have you, automatically back that up frequently. Do a backup the minute you think of it. And then you go to your Mac preference pane, go to advanced options under sync. This is fascinating, fascinating radio. And then you'll have the option to say reset sync data and say either A, replace all of this stuff on .Mac with my computer's information or vice versa. And if you've got a little time, you can actually do that any way you want with any of the various. You could do contacts. You can do bookmarks. And so anyway, it's the sub-nuclear option. The nuclear option is to destroy everything on every computer and start over from one good copy, which you will have to do this month probably.
Well, I've just made a backup. It did ask me on the Yahoo. It said, what do you want to do? You want to merge? You want to replace with this computer's copy?
That's probably good for a first one. Replacing is probably not a bad idea.
I did a merge, which is the worst thing. So I'm starting now with 489 contacts. And that's how I know. When it goes, you know, like to 12,000 contacts, I know that something's gone wrong.
Well, and you know, the funny one, if you're me and you go, oh, that didn't work right. I better force quit and start again. I'm going to force quit again and start again. And you get, you get 15 Pete Alcorns,
Well, and the other thing that actually there are 32 sync conflicts. That's the thing that happens that I really hate. I don't mind if I have duplicate Pete Alcorns. What I hate is when somehow, and actually I think the Apple's doing this, not these other ones. You get one person's name with another person's phone number because then that happens all the time. And then I'll call somebody and it's the wrong person. It's terrible.
Or it would say like public library and it's actually like my ex-wife or something.
Yeah.
Like that's awkward,
Awkward.
Is my pickup ready? Excuse me? Who is this?
The test's in. Oh, I'll get the three pane.
I also get, you get the one, do you do .Mac, Leo?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of things.
You mean mobile me?
Oh, no. Yeah, right. Mobile me. But do you get the one where it looks identical, like a mail rule will want to sync and it looks totally identical? Have you ever gotten that?
Yes, I'm getting it right now. These are exactly the same.
Find where this equals that. And I'm like, it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like,
how am I supposed to choose?
Yeah.
Or the worst one when they don't match at all.
Did you get the outage? The last, have you had slowness and non-existence of .Mac the last few days?
No. Has that been going on?
Oh, God.
Really?
Terrible. Well, this is what made a second wave of predictions come out is because it was,
wasn't responding.
It was not available. You go to the website, nothing would come up. All sync broke. And, the place you see this first is in mail.app where it'll ask you for your password again for the .Mac account.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have that happen? And you go like, it knows the password.
Yes.
Because it's down.
Hey, I found a really good fix, by the way. I don't know if this has ever happened to anybody. But if it, for some reason on one of my computers, it keeps asking me during the sync process to supply the password for a Mac I haven't used in years.
And it'll be a really, really old password.
And I don't know what the password is. I can't give it to it. And it just comes up every 5 minutes. So finally, I had a search. I found on Apple's message boards a long terminal command that essentially resets the keychain sync parameters. And you start from scratch. You're going to have to say a few allows additionally, but it got rid of that message, which has been plaguing me for months.
I had a very similar problem, and I it was driving me nuts. I was constantly, you get that pop up, you've got to constantly do.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other one.
There's other stuff you can do. I'll probably get this wrong, but I think one of them is to just double check what's in your login keychain. A lot of times the system. What you got? What do you got for syncing?
I went from 489 contacts to 950 contacts.
That's a lot of people.
That's not good.
How many Pete Alcorns?
Let me see. Pete is a good example of that. I have three Kimberly Kwans. Let's see. I have no Pete Alcorns, so it actually succeeded. Got rid of all the Pete Alcorn entries.
Like Pete. I'd miss him.
Let me see if I got any Merlins in here. No, only one Merlin. So that's good. I think there are a few duplicates, but not too bad. And they're different emails, so that's all right. So you know what? That was a good tip. I wonder who Misty228739 is, though. Probably don't want to save that in my address book.
Still really dumb, though, about the whole, like, work home email. You know what I mean? Like, getting the right kind of appellation for what that is.
Right. Hey, we're going to get your tips in just a little bit as we continue, but I do want to absolutely mention our newest sponsor, Drobo, D-R-O-B-O, which stands for Data Robotics. Drobo is the robot backup solution. And we have a very special MacBreak offer for your Drobo. Alex, you use Drobos. As do I. You'd use a lot of Drobos.
The main thing, what I'm doing right now, the process of it at the moment is that I've got one Drobo, and I basically put all of my personal, like anything that's important to me is now all in one place. And while I was doing it, you know, I thought, two terabytes will be enough, because it's not like video files. It's just my stuff, you know. And so I started throwing it on, and I immediately, you know, had to start replacing drives. And what was great is that I could just pull a drive out, throw another one in, and then just keep on going. I mean, I swapped the drives while I was copying, you know, and it was fine, you know. And so as far as I know, so anyway, so I've been putting all that stuff in and organizing it. And then what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to sync this to another Drobo. So have them both be the same. And then I'm going to have one at the house and one at the home and one at the office, and then have them syncing back and forth. And what,
over the internet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Clever.
Overnight. So I have to get them all to the same place. They're both going to, it now looks like I will have basically 3 terabytes of storage total when the dust settles, and in both of them, but it'll have all my movies, all my music, but also all of my photos and all of my stuff. And it's backed up. It's in 2 different places. And the Drobo, because it's kind of this, because everything, you know, the drives themselves are backed up. You really have as much security for the stuff that means something to you.
I love Drobo.
Every person needs it. It's so easy to use.
The other advantage of Drobo, unlike say a RAID 5 network attached storage, is you can take any SATA drives you already have.
Yeah.
You don't have to match, and you get available. You get the, you know, you, it uses all of the drives instead of just saying, oh, well, I'm going to take the smallest drive, and we'll just multiply that by 4. So if you have 160, 180, a 250, and a 500, you put them all in, and it's additive. Now, it takes about a third, a quarter to a third for redundancy, so you never lose anything. But it also gives you a huge amount of storage. And I love that, you know, they've got a little Drobo app that runs. It'll alert you if you get low. There's an orange light will come on. You have 4 green lights, which tell you the status of the Drobo drives. When one goes orange, it means, hey, we're starting to fill up. Replace this drive. It's your smallest drive.
Yeah, it's super. The thing for me is that I'm very technical in some areas, and this is not an area that I'm very committed to being technical in. You know, I don't want to know. All I know is that I want it to work I just want it to be backed up. I want to know it's safe. I don't want to know anything about RAID 5s. I don't want to know anything about any.
You don't need to. It's great. It just works.
Can I propose a combination of disclosure and experiment?
Yes.
I was that guy, a week or two ago, and I hate being that guy, but I was that guy that let them know that I'd be interested in.
Oh, you didn't really, did you?
And Scott set me up. So Scott talked to them. Thank you, Scott. And so I will soon take incredibly generous ownership of a drone.
Well, I think that's fair. You're doing ads for it.
Well, it's cheesy. I don't want to be that guy, but it's something I really want. My Ready NAS took a dirt nap. My Ready NAS will not even power up.
It
powers up
quickly
and then dies. So like I've got a terabyte of stuff on there that I don't know if I'll ever see again. Nothing against Ready NAS. It could be pilot error, but anyway, first of all, disclosure, I'm getting free stuff. Very generously. And second, I would be happy to share with you the way starting, step zero, I'm meeting with Mark, right?
Yeah, Alex? I think Mark, yeah.
Mark the Drobo dude. And we're going to meet today, and he's going to tell me what's great about Drobo.
Oh, that's cool.
I'll be happy to share that with you guys.
Please do. So here's the deal, the Drobo deal. By the way, Drobo is Drobo.com. It stands for Data Robotics. That's the company. Is it Mark who invented this? It's very clever. Really neat.
They've got a couple people there that are putting it together. It's a little company, though. You think of it as like...
Tiny.
It's making it. It's a couple people that have, a handful of people.
They're just brilliant.
Yeah, and so it's not this, it's not something new from, IBM or something. It's a really cool, well-thought-out, process.
Well, and they became famous when the inventor did a YouTube video and said, look, this is how it works. Look, isn't this cool? And everybody went, wow, that's great. There is a video now on their front page with Callie Lewis that explains how it works. But here's the special deal we've got for you. $50 off at time of purchase. Now, everybody else can get $50 off with a mail-in rebate. But if you use if you go to the special page, you'll get $50 off right away. Now, let's face it, nobody ever mails in a rebate check. So this is a rebate you get at time of purchase. A lot simpler. drobo.com/MacBreak. We've made it easier for you to save $50 on your Drobo. They have a store online. They even have the Drobolator, which will tell you how much storage you need.
And also Stu Mashwitz and I went back and forth trying to figure out how you feel, the feeling that you have when all your stuff.
It's a nice feeling.
Drobo, and we've decided it's droovy.
It's droovy.
You feel very droovy.
Because you just know you're safe. That's a really good way to put it. You just know you're safe. To learn more about Drobo, receive $50 off your own Drobo right now, instantly. Go to drobo.com/MacBreak. Offers good through August 31st. So if you're listening to this show, in September, I'm sorry, you missed the boat.
You ever do that? You get a comic book and you want to fill out the form and send something in. Have you ever wanted to do that? You get an old Richie Rich and like you want to send in. Have you ever
do they still sell those X-ray glasses for 50 cents? That's what I want to know.
Yes, sir. I'm quite interested in your fart powder. Please send to the dressing coat. Here's my 5 cents.
Signed, Master Merlin Man.
The X-ray specs. That's the one with the lady walking by.
And the guy's going, whoa.
But Charles, that I could definitely, I'm constantly getting sand kicked in my face.
That's the funnest part of comic books is the old stuff. All right, let's get to our Mac picks of the week. I don't know. Did we cover all the news? It seems like we've gone very quickly on this show.
I think we've covered it, though.
We actually might be under 5 hours this week.
I think tomorrow, next week will be busy.
Oh, I know. I forgot to mention that Canada and the UK got iTunes movie rentals today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I like to say it for our friends in the Canada and UK.
So we get it for 24 hours.
They get 48 hours.
So they're on metric.
See, they're already learning.
It's metric time.
Editorial hours. I knew we were going to get screwed.
So it was worth waiting, England. Movies from 20th Century Fox, Disney, Paramount, Warner Brothers, Universal, MBM, and Maple Pictures, which must be a Canadian thing. All the goodness of Maple in every movie. And in the UK, they get Disney, Paramount, Warner Brothers, MGM, Lionsgate, UK, and Sony. Price is a little higher. They're going to pay a little more. In the Canada, $4.99 for a movie, $19.99 to buy it.
Well, they do have the earlier harvest up there.
That's right.
That's usually why.
It's the crisp winters. They spend more time in bed in Canada. So that's good. Yeah, I'm very happy for our Canadian friends. I feel that's a... Because, I got to tell you, I stopped going up there now, but going up there every month as I did for several years, they feel really left behind. They can't get the books that
It's ridiculous. I mean, once you meet the Canadians and you visit with them, you realize they're very much like us.
There's not that much difference. I mean, they have the
little... Good for us because it's less violent up there. They have better health care, so they do live longer. But what kind of a life is that going to be?
Exactly.
Well, we die bleeding in the streets, stabbed to death by school children at age 53, 54 at the latest. But damn it, we live life.
We live it because we can rent movies on iTunes. And I think that's really that gap has been closed. That and the softwood agreements. iFixit. I don't know why somebody sent me this. iFixit, Mac and iPod parts and upgrades. Oh, that's kind of neat. This is apparently not an authorized Apple repair service. Otherwise, they wouldn't be actually able to fix anything.
Can I ask a question since we got some time?
Yeah.
Did you install your ATV stick, Leo?
I did. Oh, I knew I had something to talk about.
You know, I went out and ordered one.
And like, then they canceled your order, didn't they?
They canceled, but now they made it a download.
They're back.
But I'm just curious.
I installed it. I rebooted.
The show.
So, yes, in fact, so that was that my pick last week?
Was. If memory serves, it was.
So I think I had already done it. I wouldn't pick it if I hadn't already done it. Let me give you an update. Oh, I do have an update for you. Because you asked Merlin if the MKV files would play. And it does, in fact, say it supports MKV not well. I've ended up, every time I've tried to play an MKV, it starts, it stutters, and then the Apple TV crashes. I think it's not enough horsepower.
Well, you're talking MKVs, especially if you're doing 1080. Sorry to use your term there, Alex. If you're doing 1080i movies, like that's...
Maybe it's the particular files I'm getting. That could be. I only tried it with two or threes. But then, so I just visual hub them. Everything else plays great. I'm loving Sapphire, which is, you have actually several choices in the... And I presume that the stick that they're offering for download works pretty much the same. They said there was some file in there that there was debate about whether it was freely distributable. I imagine a file from Apple. You know, the Patch Stick, which is the open source version of this. And by the way, you can do this for free with Patch Stick, but you need a Tiger disk. So,
well, it's funny you should say that. I don't know if this is how it was before, but the last chapter of this story is I have had no luck installing it. But the first chapter is when you do the install and you're running some Unix commands, the command that you're running from the shell is create patch stick.
So oh, you're I wonder. Kidding. If, so it really is yeah, a patch when, stick.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
So I didn't know you got one.
Well, I bought it, but then they canceled my order because they stopped doing it. And then a couple days later, I saw that it was available for download,
right.
And I bought it, and I've had no luck burning it. I don't know if my drive's too big, what, but anyway.
Try putting it on a flash drive.
I did. No, that's what I did, on a USB drive. I've spent half a day trying to do it.
Oh, that's
so
too bad.
I'm going to borrow one from somebody.
So it's applecorellc.com. Well, since you already bought it, I'll send you mine because I have the original one. It worked flawlessly. You put the USB key in the Apple TV. First you reset
power
the out. Apple TV.
Down, yeah.
Well, but they also, and maybe they didn't tell you this, you want to restore it to original factory condition.
Yeah, I did restore and then update.
And then the full update. So you basically have a clean version 2 Apple TV. Mm-hmm. Power it down, put the stick in, power it up. It boots up. As you say, it runs all these Unix commands, which is essentially what I think Patch Stick does. And then you power it down again and take out the stick and power it up, and it installs. So it's the first command set up the install. You take the stick out, everything's on the drive, it does the install. It worked flawlessly for me. Sapphire, which is one of the programs it puts on there, it does something really cool. Not that I would do this, but if you download video from the internet, whether BitTorrent or news groups or something, you know, it comes kind of in an oddball way. The names aren't there. There's no meta file information, meta tags. This Sapphire goes out, it goes to IMDb. It gets all of the, it can tell from the file name. It says, oh, is this The Wire episode series season 5? And you say, yeah. And it not only does it populate it with images, it does show descriptions. You can turn off the spoilers. You can say no spoilers. Otherwise, it gives you a full show description. Who was in it? Tells you everything. It's so much more complete than what you get from the iTunes store. It divides them up. So I was spending a lot of time kind of renaming.
You do that for an episode? You do the conventional,
it makes
I understand,
it in a folder.
Where you do like name dot whatever and whatever.
Apparently it knows the convention, or at least it can deduce enough from the thing. Sometimes it'll say, okay, well, what show is this? And you have to pick from IMDb's list. But once you pick, it makes folders. It renames the, puts in the meta file data. I don't know if it renames it, but it puts it so that it looks incredible. It's like what you would have done if you were really... anal retentive and wanted it to be just so. Does a great job.
Did you do that? There's one service where you can go and it's, I'm talking on my butt, but it's like a Hulu type thing where you can go and watch movies. Isn't it something like that?
Yes. And we talked a little bit about that because all the movies are indie movies and there's a lot of
Bollywood. You get Bollywood movies.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember the name of it. That's one of the things on there. So I'm not sure why it's not working for you, but yeah, Apple Core LLC.
But it all feels good. It still feels like an Apple TV.
Love it. It's all still there. It's made my Apple TV much more functional. I have RSS feeds out of I can subscribe to. I can, it's just, I stick with Sapphire though, because what it does mostly for me is it kind of organizes all those disparate files that weren't organized. So that's an update on that. The day after I recommended it last week, they pulled it off the market and canceled everybody's orders, including Merlin's. But 1 week
I did pay for it for the download. So if I do borrow somebody's stick, I won't feel too bad.
Yeah, I'll send you mine. I mean, I presume it's the same thing. And then if you really don't want to pay for it, it's $60. You can get the
Aqua TV has all this stuff on their wiki.
That's the
right?
patch stick, yeah. And yeah, it's if you look at you can actually just Google patch stick, you'll find Aqua TV. If you look at the instructions, this is exactly what I was talking about last week. Oh, another update. Bokeh. Andy, do you want to address this? I feel terrible. You don't want to say a word?
So let me explain why. I'm desperately thirsty. I've been looking at this bagel for the past.
Go ahead. Chow down. I'll read the email. This is from Oliver Wagner. He says, "Hi, Andy. First of all, I want to say thanks for making Bokeh your Mac pick of the week. Second, I heard Leo's comments about Bokeh today.
And I
just want to clarify a few things."
This is you now, just for the folks who missed last, you were balking about paying $17, right?
That was my pick of the week. I said that it was a wonderful, wonderful, sweet application because I'm a supporter of independent developers wherever they are. And well,
as am I. I buy a lot of shareware.
Unlike Leo.
I buy a lot of shareware. I pay for every piece of shareware. But having written software myself and distribute, I never charged for any of my software. It was always free. This was when I was a young man. I'd still have brain cells. But it was always free and always open source. I would give away the source before there was such a thing. That's how long ago that was. I know a little bit about this stuff. And sometimes I look at the software like this and I say, you know what? That's a Unix command. They're just wrapping a Unix command in a Cocoa interface and calling it a day. And I don't want to pay $17 for that. So he says, no. He says, maybe you could forward this to Leo, which Andy did. No, Bokeh is not an Apple script. Though we have put in the effort to make it Apple scriptable, which I know is non-trivial. How it competes with Nice. Nice is the program that I suggested. You could probably just use Nice or Renice. Nice was useful when the default system scheduler wasn't as advanced as it is now, but you'll find it doesn't do much more than OS X does already. Bokeh does not use Nice. It sends pause signals. And by the way, in order to do that, you have to write a C program. I know that also. Bokeh is a fancy front for the terminal and brings functionality users who might not know how to use Unix or would just rather to click a button, prefer automation, and like streamlined integration into their daily computing experience. So I guess he's kind of saying, you know, it is a terminal. You could do this in a terminal, but we've made it
easier. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, let's be honest, what is Visual Hub?
Yeah, Visual Hub is FFmpeg, right.
Have you ever tried to use as an FFmpeg from the terminal?
Oh, I've used it.
Do you know how many? Yeah. Alex will tell you. Do you know how many flags there are for FFmpeg?
Yeah.
Like
But no, I have used FFmpeg, and I've even written Bash scripts to incorporate it into workflow and everything. So yeah, I'm familiar with all that. And there's absolutely times when I don't want to do that. And I think actually Patch Stick is a very good example. You could do exactly what the ATV does with yourself for free for Patch Stick. And after looking at all the stuff I'd had to do and how easy it would be to mistype one thing and get it all wrong and hose my Apple TV, I decided I'm going to spend $60 on what is also a repackaging of a simple Unix, bunch of Unix commands. Yeah, so
you can't really just say it's a repackaging because Bokeh, he had to think of a way to make it useful, to make it a
really
enjoyable.
Oh, no, I was talking about Patch Stick. I agree with you on Bokeh.
I'm saying in general, when you talk about stuff like that, I mean, unless it's just your typical, you can always tell when something is just a simple Apple Script Studio project, because you can see it's just a simple set of pop-ups, a simple button. You can see that it's just pulling a command line and that's it. But when you see a really well-done app, like the ones we've been talking about, it's more like those change machines outside the supermarket that count your money, but they charge you 8 or 9%.
Right.
They withhold 8 or 9% as a fee. And yeah, it kind of sucks that you're spending, you're dumping in $100 and you're only getting $91 back.
Right.
But then I think, how much would I charge one of the kids in my street to count this big jar full of change, roll them up, exactly. put labels on them, like yes. the bank says. Great. I would give them $9 for that. That's a good user interface for the problem.
That's an excellent, excellent point. So I will pay for Boca right after this show. And actually, Merlin, I'd like to hear an update on what's going on with your ATV. If you can't make that work.
No, I'm an idiot. My friend, what is his real name? He's Luomat on L-U-O-M-A-T on the Twitter. I was kind of watching him as he was live Twittering his progress on it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this thing existed. So I went and I got it. And it's not, I mean, if you know a little bit of command line stuff, it's not hard. You can copy and paste terms. I mean, it's easier than installing Drupal. And you just basically, you CD into this directory and then you run this thing, you know, from sudo, this command. And I got it. I created the thing. It's just not booting for me. So right. Now that I'm that guy and I officially am a loser who asks people for help, if anybody knows any reason why I would create a disk, but it wouldn't then boot.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't even know that you could do that on an Apple TV, that you could put something in that USB port and it would boot. That's pretty cool.
I thought it wasn't connected to anything.
I did. I know. Me too.
I thought it was ornamental.
Somebody keeps asking me, a number of people ask me, can you put an extra hard drive in that USB port and then have the Apple TV see it? And I don't think you can. I don't think that this allows that to do that.
Do you know anything about Andy? I think that's going to be a non-addressable Flugelport probably that's going to have a lot of gerstinken on the flipping. Because if you want to get that thing enabled, you're going to have to flip the bit on the...
The problem with having a free repolarating ding alarm is sinusoidal repolarization. Right. You always have to mount it. You have to isolate it by putting on a base plate, usually of amulite. But if it's amulite, it has to be pre-framulite.
And it makes a lot of heat.
You got to make sure not to touch the snickety snot.
Yeah.
Well, now you're just
if you touch the snickety snot, you're going to get a whatchamacallit.
I think snickety snot, that's a candy from my childhood, I think.
Well, it's also a very important connector inside of graphics.
It hooks up to the Johnson rod.
The Clinton administration's EPA director banned snickety snot from domestic use. You can still export it, but you cannot sell it domestically.
That's chill, Twitter.
I think they still make it in the Philippines.
I'm surprised you don't already know that.
If you were following the snickety snot user group, you would know that this was no longer an issue.
But McBreak Weekly.
They've never made
things
like that.
I was dismayed to learn that you're disseminating a well-known
Dear Mr. Lindsay.
Please let me know when I can look
Please
forward
stop
to hearing Lin your correction.
Saying things that are wrong.
I expect to be credited with the correction. Thank
you know, I just think it's a whole lot of environmentalists, you know, who just don't understand snickety snot. I think that's really
Must
the problem.
Credit lonely guy.
All right. We are going to get to our picks in just a second. But before we do
we're doing a podcast today, aren't we?
No, not at all.
We started?
Okay.
Let's start the show. What do you say?
Rolling.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly. You could just disregard the last hour and a half. That portion of your life now is officially gone and lost.
Yeah, I already have.
We're going to get to our picks in just a second, but it is time to mention our great friends at audible.com. audible.com/MacBreakWeekly. These are the folks that give us the incredible audio books. Andy, did you get any feedback on your God delusion rant last week?
Rant? It was a very seasoned, very rational, very very deliberated person. A lot of people who I was very pleased with the feedback that I got. I got one or two, it pleased me that I got one or two emails from people saying, you know, atheists like you will never understand. And I got just as many one or two emails from people saying, the problem is that you're irrational because you still believe in this deluded idea of a giant invisible friend in the sky who gives you presents. But by far the most, I got 30, 40 emails. Most of them were just from people saying, gee, you know, you've actually, that I'm glad to see that you're recommending the book, even though you agree or disagree with it. I think the general consensus of the people who emailed me were that it's a great crucible for discussion. Yeah. It's not there simply to tell you that you're right or to tell you that you're wrong. It's a good thing for you to bounce your own beliefs off of. And as I said, I do recommend it because it is a really good process. It really does get you thinking about how you believe and why you believe.
I think it's fascinating.
Part of the problem is that I think, like the Mideast, people don't realize you're talking about religion if you're not screening. And so I think it was deceptive in that sense.
Or singing.
You were having a very measured. You were having a very measured discussion about a topic that's volatile, but very interesting.
So are we going to recommend The Portable Atheist this week?
I'm going to recommend a book called Everybody's Wrong But Me. I read it.
The best presumptive book was actually suggested in a Charles Schulz peanut strip, which is a book called Has It Ever Occurred to You That You Might Be Wrong?
I would
spend $24.95 for that book. That's an author who's definitely got something going on.
Whereas the Firesign Theater once said, everything you know is wrong. You can, by the way, if you are a believer, if you're a Christian believer, I should say, actually, I think probably almost every religion, you can get these great books on audible.com. They have an unabridged Bible read by, are you ready for this? Gregory Peck. That would be good. Let's hear. Wait a minute. I got to play a little bit of this. Gregory Peck reading the Bible. Oh, no. I could have left the horns out. Sounds like an episode of Davy and Goliath now, I'm afraid.
The Bible, the New Testament.
Get to the Gregory Peck part.
Performed by Gregory Peck.
In the beginning, all was darkness. And then God said, let there be light. And it was still dark, but now you could see it.
I think this would be worth getting, though, really, if it's...
Just to me, a graven image.
The Gospel according to St. Matthew, chapter 1, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham.
Oh, no, no. Now, we're not laughing at the Bible, ladies and gentlemen.
No,
please,
we're
no letters.
Gregory Peck. if we could get Charlton Heston reading it, I would totally, or Troy McClure, I would totally do it.
I think Gregory Peck's like the next best thing.
Yeah.
We do have, all right. You don't want Gregory Peck? There are actually, believe it or not, on audible.com, there are choices for everyone.
Do they have Studs Terkel?
I really enjoy Joseph Bayard.
At the beginning.
And we got Fred Nick.
Abraham, we got Isaac.
let me, this is James Earl Jones.
I interviewed Isaac. Here is your excerpt from that interview.
I was 75 at the time.
Wait a minute, listen, James Earl Jones.
When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him.
Oh, they could leave the cheesy music out of the background. That's too bad.
No piano in the Bible.
This is Genesis. I wonder if he does it. Let's see. There's many choices.
There's that one part. I think it might be in where he goes. He spends 40 days in the desert and meets Darth Vader.
All right. So we're going to just recommend, if you want the Bible, there are a lot of different ways you could listen to this. Just this is
you're recommending the Bible. Is that the recommendation?
The Bible is my recommendation, but
it's a
the
great book.
No, here's the point. How many times have you?
Let's have the Bible benefit from that Mac Break Weekly bump.
it doesn't sell that well. I hear the people are buying the Bible.
There's Oprah. There's a Colbert Report. And then there's Mac Break Weekly. You'll want to get us to talk about that book.
Yeah, if you can get on it, that's the deal. Audible.com. Yeah, I'm going to recommend it. The Bible.
I'm going to be more specific. I'm going to recommend.
Okay, here's the only thing I have to say about the.
Wait a minute, Merlin, go ahead.
I'm going to repeat my recommendation from You Look Nice Today. If you're going to go with the gospel, yeah. John.
John's
a good gospel. I think that's the go-to gospel.
the thing I have to say.
I like Mark. I'll be honest with you. Mark's, I think, my favorite.
Mark was a physician. Is that right? He was a doctor. Or is that Luke? Luke was a doctor.
If you want to go with one of the Coptic Gospels, fine. But what I'm really interested in finding out about is what's the legendary missing gospel, because the way that these gospels were written, there's a theory that there's one common source that all the apostles were reading and commenting from. So the one big canonical gospel supposedly out there in a pot somewhere in the desert waiting to be found.
Wow, really? I didn't know that.
There's a lot of gospels.
There is. It's really cool. Now we're talking Bible talk with Leo, Andy, and Marlon. But it's cool because they're trying to figure out in what series were these. These are supposedly the eyewitness accounts of Jesus's life.
Right.
Let's try to figure out. The theory is that one guy wrote the first gospel and then passed it around. And then John would say, well, no, actually it wasn't like this. It was more like this, because one of them is very, very journalistic. Here's what happened. Here's what happened in what sequence. One of them is more lyrical. Here's what people were thinking. It gets more and more lyrical, as the Gospels progress. One theory is that again, it was written in a specific order because people were reacting to the journalistic version.
Oh, that's interesting.
Another theory. Huh. I actually had a note to read more about it because it seemed more interesting.
Have you seen the Jesus Seminar version of the Gospels? Because this is a group of all different like historians.
Yes, that's where I read it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating book. And so the idea is you've seen, like, for example, red letter editions of the Bible where all Jesus's words are in red. The Jesus Seminar goes through and based on their, like, they sat down and they really talked about the Gospels. And their highlighting system, if memory serves, is we're almost positive. There's almost no doubt that Jesus said this, and that's in this color. There's a pretty good chance that Jesus said this in a different color. Am I getting this right, Andy? Then there's like, yeah, he probably didn't say that in a different color. And then there's like, no way in hell did he ever say this.
And from what I understand, a lot of that had to do with the thing that's probably the most accurate of all the things in the New Testament is actually what he said. You know, all the stuff in between.
His commentary.
A little less sure of, you know, yeah. but they said it's probably somebody's, there was somebody there who said
scribe, those scribe stuck it in or something.
Yes. And I should mention, by the way, not just the Bible, but all the holy books are available on audible.com. I think a great way to listen.
It's really worth going through. You know, the one thing that to be careful of is that a lot of times, you know, you went to Sunday school and you had a certain view of the Bible. But the Bible is really something that's closer to PG-13, maybe, or even R in places, rather than the G version that we got. If you actually read the entire thing, you know, like there's some clips I won't talk about on here, but there's like my favorite thing from the entire Bible is in Judges, where you have an after Ehud. Came Shamgar, who killed 600 Philistines with an ox goad. He too saved Israel. And then it just goes on to the next one.
It's like, but he was there.
You got to save something for the sequel. You got to keep them coming back for
but it was so funny. You had this long thing about a judge, and then you have this short thing where you have, you know,
he killed a few people.
You got to talk about him. I mean, the guy killed 600 people with ox goad. I mean,
a lot of people get a really nice idea because all they know is the Cinemax's version of Esther After Dark, which is not completely true to the original text.
It's the same reason why they put Samuel L. Jackson in Iron Man, to get you that hook for that means that.
Hey, by the way, thank you for telling me to stick around through the credits.
Go.
I had no idea. I mean, I'm sitting there and it's not like. Wait a minute. Let me finish the ad, and then we're going to talk about that.
Yes, exactly. Money in.
This is why these ads end up being 8 minutes long. It's not because the ad is 8 minutes long. It's just spread throughout a variety of rat holes.
Your best media buy dollar, ladies and gentlemen, is ad space on Mac Break Weekly.
It's true. If you can, if you could tolerate the stuff in between. So we do. You know, there's a lot of great stuff. What's great about Audible is, and you could see this in the panel. We love ideas, and that's what it is. It's just a place to get ideas, to learn, to enjoy, to relax. Audible.com/MacBreak. Go there right now. Sign up today. You're going to thank me for it. I promise you. You'll get a free book when you sign up today at audible.com/MacBreak. We do thank them so much for their support. 1 year now. It's our 1 year anniversary. And guys, I wanted to let you know, you all have as a celebration. For those of you who don't have Audible accounts yet, I think you all do, but you get we're going to give everybody who's a
free Bible, free Bible.
We're giving you all a free Bible. Yeah. No, we're giving you all a free Mac, a free Audible account.
Yay.
So,
I literally signed up last week.
No, well, that's good. Just send me your signups, 'cause I know you're all members already, and we'll comp. Well, Audible says we'll comp all of them. So
Hot Bible Dude 69.
can I say something to any executives at Audible who might be listening? Number one, thanks so much, because I'm going to abuse the hell out of this.
Yeah.
I want to tell you the story about when Mac User gave me a free CompuServe account. And my first question was...
You found the Betty Page room?
No. I had a conversation with the sysadmin, and I said, "Oh well, what's my monthly budget per month?" And he said, "Oh well, for God's sakes, you know, we got so much money around here, you know, we got a great deal with them. We exchanged their content. It's almost virtually impossible for you to spend so much money that they get a flag." And 2 months later, I got it. You know, we'd like you to keep it under $2,000 if you can.
Yeah. My first free CompuServe account, I discovered Colossal Cave. And I was on that 300 baud modem. I had an acoustic coupler, and I was on that thing probably 8 hours a day exploring Colossal Cave.
The phone, like where you put the phone in?
Yeah,
the
rubber cups. You dial. You would dial the phone you'd hold up the phone, you'd dial it, and then you go, and you jam it in the coupler, and then you could be on and play Colossal Cave. You are in an alley. Plug. So. yes, enjoy your comp account, Andy, for as long as it lasts.
So everybody, if there's some bandwidth issues and downloading books from Audible, as soon as I get that email from the company saying, you know what, how about one a month? Then you'll be able to download
it. Not go effect.
Yeah. I'm buying that entire like speak Hebrew in 8 lessons or less, because that's the most expensive one I've seen yet. So that's why I'm downloading.
We thought he was busy. We had no idea he could listen to that many books. You know, I did one of the things that we did that was really fun is, you know, we're doing this podcast with a woman who's rowing across the Pacific, Roz Savage, and she, by the way, it's going great. And I gave her my iPod with 323 books, but I underestimated how much listening she would do. She rows 15 hours a day. She went through Bleak House in like 2 days.
She rode to Bleak House?
She's rowing to Crime and Punishment. She did the entire...
that's crazy.
She says, a great book to be in the middle of the ocean with.
She says, here's why this works.
Stop Anna Karenina.
She says, this is why it works. Because she goes, boy, it could be worse. I could be in a Russian prison. It could be worse. So she went through the whole Discworld thing. I gave her 323 books. And I'm thinking, I should have given her more. I wasn't thinking. She loves those books. It's really kind of cool. All right. So what did I say we would talk about, but not in the middle of the ad? I've forgotten.
The Bible.
No. No. Come on.
Picks?
Well, we're going to do our picks in a second. All right, let me ask the chat room. Iron Man.
There you go. Yes.
Thank you, Chewy67.
And I'm pretty upset about it.
Here comes... first of all, they do play the Ozzy Osbourne lick. Yes, it sounds just like that.
Played on a thumb and an out of tune acoustic guitar.
You know, one thing I like about You Like Look Nice Today is those intermezzos, a little
musical
guitar. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good way. That's a good way to kind of say, okay,
like
now
an Irish folk tune from this week. We had a little Irish folk tune.
Yeah, the little penny whistle thing. It was very cute. If you don't listen to that podcast, you're missing probably the funniest show anywhere. I mean, funnier than Daily Show, funniest show anywhere. So Iron Man, who told me to stick around through the credits? Because you were right.
It might very well have been me. It seems like something pointless and nerdy.
I'm sitting in the theater. Everybody's left but me and one middle-aged lady. I mean, literally, everybody is gone. And because it's not like sometimes they, you know, like it's Smokey and the Bandit, they play a little bit of the credits and then they, you know, then they do the bloopers. It's not like that. You have to watch every grip, every best boy, every modeler.
With Idiocracy has one of those too.
Oh, it goes on and on and on and on and on. I'm sitting there going, I hope Andy wasn't kidding me. And there it is. And boy, it's a stunner.
Is it, it will be a spoiler if you tell us what it is.
Oh, it's a total spoiler. I can't, right, Andy? I can't say what it is.
It's more, if you read the comic, it will basically say, oh my God.
You know what?
I'm sitting here so I can be first in line to buy the next movie.
Yeah, it set up the sequel. I guess that's enough to say that.
Yes.
And I never read the comic. However, I have to say, it really made, to me, it kind of, the movie went up a whole notch at that point. It was like, yeah, it was great. I thought it was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, Will Harris, I think, actually also told me to stick around through the credits. Let's give him credit, and let's give Rickster in our chat room credit for that. So it is time for our picks of the week, ladies and a gentleman. Let's start with Mr. Andy Anatko.
My pick of the week is something that arrived just this morning. Sometimes it's like Christmas morning being a technology columnist. You run downstairs in your pajamas to see that men in brightly colored costumes have delivered colorful packages on your doorstep. This is no change. Flip Video sent me their brand new Flip Mino.
What do you think of that?
I love it. It's like the iPod Nano version of the Flip Video. In that it's a lot slimmer, it's a lot narrower, it's more like I don't even want to say a cell phone, because cell phones are now bulky, like, you know, big like the iPhone. It's about this, you know, it's about the size of like the tiny little packet of crayons that you get at the Sizzler when you ask for the children's menu and the children's placemat, and you get 4 crayons to color with. That's about the size of it. And it has just about all the regular features of the regular Flip Video. It shoots 30 frames per second, 640 by 480 video. They gave me the black one, and that has enough for something like, I believe, an hour of video at least. It's a lot slimmer. which is good in that it's a lot slimmer, bad in that it no longer runs on two AA batteries. So you can't just go to a drugstore or a gas station and get more power for it. However, the battery, the built-in rechargeable battery lasts for 4 hours, recharges through the USB port. They did hold on to the flip-out USB connector. The really, really cool thing is that they added a tripod mount to the bottom of it.
Oh, so, hallelujah.
Exactly. And nice. It was literally a situation where I came downstairs. I had like 90 minutes, like 2 hours to go out, run some errands. This is Wednesday, so I had to buy my new comics, all that other sort of stuff before I got back in time for the podcast. But it's like, oh, I'm going through like this little box of little tripods. And yes, I found the little suction cup screw mount tripod mount. And I'm like, oh, if I ever want to pretend that I'm on an episode, I'm on the good side of the fence on an episode of Cops. You can just, you know, $179 for this little camera, maybe $15 for this little suction cup window mount. Just put that on your dashboard and you can, you know, you can even better. You can be like Chef Gordon Ramsay saying the Sizzler on Route 14 in Weymouth is in trouble. They have an old menu. They've got a staff that doesn't even care. Let's see if we can straighten them out. You know, do all these really cool drive and talk videos. But it's
where do you post those, just out of curiosity?
Actually, I do have a YouTube account that I haven't updated for a couple months now because I haven't had time to do real videos. I'm going to start that up again. I actually put a sample video and the unboxing or turnaround video on my Flickr account. If you go to flickr.com/photos/AndyI, you will see photos of the device. You will also see pictures I shot, a video I shot walking into my favorite comic book shop in Waltham, Massachusetts. Warning, though, realize that video has been transcoded twice now because I had to transcode it once to convert it into QuickTime, and then it got transcoded again when you upload it to Flickr. As with every Flip video device, the best purchase that you can make for it is the $20 for Visual Hub, because it does come with software built in that will, you know, edit and play video. But you really want to, if you buy Visual Hub, you can just drag this AVI file straight off the Flip video when it's plugged in, drag it right onto Visual Hub. It'll be converted into an MP4 that you can then put onto YouTube, put into iMovie, put into whatever.
Is this the one, if I'm going to get a Flip, because I haven't got a Flip, and I've heard you and Merlin both recommend these inexpensive video cameras. Is this the one to get, is the Mino?
I think, if you want these tiny use anywhere cameras that you're not expecting camcorder performance, then yes. The big problem with all the Flip cameras is something that you will see if you check out that video on Flickr. Obviously, it compresses the hell out of the image.
Yeah.
So any video that has lots and lots and lots of movement, like if you're doing a walk and talk, if you're just holding in front of you and walking down a street, that's probably the absolute worst quality video you can possibly shoot with it. But it does have great advantages, and just the simple fact that you will toss it. You know, if you're on a cruise, you know, maybe you're not going to take your SLR with you. Maybe you're not even going to take that little compact camcorder with you. But what the hell? You will toss this little tiny cigarette, half a cigarette pack size thing into your pocket. Mm-hmm. And then when there's something that you really wish you had a camera for, you've got it. And for purchases of Merlin and Andy's famous internet tactical pants, there is a pocket. There's a pocket on the left side. That's the perfect. It's supposed to be for an ammo clip. It's the perfect size for the iPhone. I did test it out this morning. It fits. The new Flip video fits perfectly in that tiny little pocket on the right above
it's,
the main
it's,
size.
It's astounding how exactly an iPhone fits in there. It's almost disturbing.
I this is the first
tight,
real
tight.
Video.
It is tight, but it does go.
It fits well. I mean, I'll go off on this very quickly, but I just have to mention that, you know, this is going to be one of the next videos that I shoot for YouTube. It's almost as if they got every cool piece of technology and gave it to the tailor and saying, make sure every pocket is a perfect fit for this, because I had to try it out.
Because
I've got this stuff in my these technologies, these gizmos in my drawer. So it's like, okay, so iPhone, yep, fits perfectly in there. Flip video, okay, fits perfectly in this pocket. Okay, the Kindle fits perfectly into the back pocket. How about the Asus EPC? Yep, fits perfectly in the other back pocket. You can walk around.
It's as
with
if
like,
they knew somehow.
It's you can start global thermonuclear war circa 1993 with all the technology you can carry just in these one set of pants. So, but this is about the Flip video Mino. And like I said, it's really an improvement on the other one. It costs almost nothing more than what the old version costs. It has just about every single piece of capability. And yet it's smaller, it's cuter, it's lighter, it's nicer.
Let me ask you, because Sparky and Corona is asking in the IRC chat room, In the past, he's had trouble importing his Flip Video into his iMovie. Does this work pretty well with iMovie?
Like I said, the best purchase you can possibly make is to get Visual Hub. As a matter of fact,
do a .dv.
Excuse me?
Do you do .dv file?
So talk to me about the workflow. So you plug in the USB key from the Flip Video. You copy the video off to your desktop. It's an MP4, right?
You plug it into a USB port and it appears as a USB mass storage device.
Okay.
You can just the videos land on the Flip Video as AVI files, MPEG compressed.
Okay.
You do have to have, now technically, if you're going to go by the numbers based on the manual, you have to install a special codec to make it work with QuickTime. Okay. I've never used it because it's just not as good as simply, again, $20 for Visual Hub. Drag the file directly onto the icon. It'll convert it into whatever format you want. Just convert it into an MP4, and then I can edit it in iMovie.
All right. That's why you want Visual Hub.
That's, again, it's just, it solves the installing a codec slaps at the problem. Converting it with Visual Hub solves the problem.
Right. All right. I think I'm going to get one. I've been putting it off. I think the fact that it has a tripod mount means for a Gorillapod and so forth, it sounds like a great choice. And you want the tripod because you don't want a lot of movement. The compression will do much better with less movement.
Exactly. If you're doing the sort of thing where you just sort of stick it on the wall and you sit in front of it and talk, the video is extremely good. It's probably just about as good as any VHS-C or even SVHS camcorder your dad might have used like five, six, or seven years ago.
That's the irony of it. I mean, we're all becoming video snobs, but frankly, you know, this stuff is better than the stuff you were using a few years ago.
Right? And Andy, is there an analog out? Because there's an analog out in the original Flip.
Yes, there's still an analog out, your basic headphone jack style plug on the side of it. So if you want to have RCA connectors, you can plug it into any TV. The software, you can click on a button and order a DVD, that sort of stuff.
There's a really sick side of me that wants to basically take three of these little phones and put them on little tripods and then run them into like a little analog mixer and then out into the computer. And you have your own little three camera shoot that cost you about, you know, $500.
Oh, you're way behind, sir. I'm cleaning up my office because I'm preparing for a move. And you just realize that, my God, I've collected a stupid number of like these inexpensive little consumer camcorders. And yeah, I did decide, you know what? It's the Me Show starring me, and just set them up like just with Velcro, like on every single surface. And I've got me from like seven different angles, at anywhere from like 320 by 240 to 720 by 480 or whatever.
Can you switch to them?
I do have Adobe Premiere. What you do is you do the old fashioned trick where either you get a camera flash and you get every camera running and then you simply, you know, manually set off the flash. So you basically get sort of a visual slate that helps you sync up every single one of these seven different sources of video. And then from there, Adobe Premiere, you can just say, okay, camera one. Okay. Hold on. Camera four, go. You know, you're directing the Grammys or something.
I want to see this video. I can't wait.
That was how I tried to learn Adobe Premiere a few months ago.
Wow. Crazy.
Not with this exact
sick
setup.
Boy.
You know, let's get three cameras and see. Okay. And remember, go to the wide shot and wait for the reaction and go.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about how much I spent on these Canon XL2 cameras, the TriCaster switcher, the studio lights, and I could have bought three flips.
There you go. Would have been just as good.
Actually,
HD video.
Actually, come to think of it, I could have bought more like 3,000 flips, but that's another matter. All right. I'm going to do my pick right now since we're talking about video, because I'm really excited about this, and I've been using it in the studio. Have I talked about my ITV Plus in here yet?
No.
You know, this is the Elgato device. I really like this thing. It is a it's just a little white box that has on one side, it has the S video connector. On one side, it has a cable connector. And then it has a little dongle that you can attach to it via what, you know, looks like an S-Video cable that gives you composite in or S-Video in. And then it plugs into the Mac via USB. I have to admit, when I first saw that, I went, oh, that's not good, because the USB, you know, it seems like USB would not be fast enough. But I have to tell you, it's plenty fast enough. The ITV 250 Plus, you hook it up to your cable. So the first thing I do when you hook it up to the cable, like you would with any cable device, is you scan the channels. Now, we have a Comcast business class cable. You know, I had to pay $10 more so I'd get CNN. But I don't know if they know this, and I hope Comcast isn't listening, but I have also high-def digital channels you know, 700, 701, 702. I have a bunch of high def channels in here. It looks great. I make it go full screen on my 37 inch LCD.
It's free to air.
Well, it's cable.
Air channels.
You can get air channels. This has ClearQuam. So you can get air channels if you have an antenna. It has an ATSC tuner in it. So it works with your cable. Unencrypted digital cable using ClearQuam. It uses analog free-to-air HDTV. It has TiVo-like recording capabilities that are fantastic. In fact, as you're watching something live, you can press pause just like on a TiVo. You can rewind. It not only goes through the channel, it goes through everything you've watched since you turned it on. So it's recording in the background. It allows you to make your own recordings. It allows you to burn to DVD. It comes with Roxio Toast 8. So you can immediately make a DVD. You can use it for an A to D converter. If you've got VHS tapes, you connect it up and it'll do the conversion. This is the greatest way. I'm connecting my Mac Mini now to my TV, and it's working fantastic. So I have picture in picture right now, but I can also go full screen with it. It comes with its own little remote control that'll let you turn on the controller. It has a cable guide built into it. Which is free right now. It looks as if at the end of the year that situation is going to change. So I'm not sure what they're going to do at that point. But right now, I really like the ability I have to switch. In fact, I'm showing on the feed. I'm showing people the controller. It's really really cool. So I'm gonna show the smart guide, which looks a lot like a TiVo playlist, a program guide. And I guess it gets that from, depending on what country you're in, it gets that from different services that are free. You can just double-click a show, just like you would on TiVo, and you could say, add it to my schedule, and it'll add it to your schedule. I mean, this thing is really, really slick. I've got... Everything unencrypted. Now, if you hook it up to a digital cable box, I guess it would do that. But I don't have a digital cable box. I'm going right directly to the cable. So Titan TV provides the directory... right now, although as I said, I think at the end of the year that's going to change. But this is set up to work internationally. You have a variety, you know, pretty much any country in the world. This will work with program guides that are local to that country. This is kind of the ultimate TV device. I've been very happy with it. And as I said, if I pick a channel that's a high def channel and go to it, and then go full screen on my TV, even though it's coming in through the USB port, which I thought, well, that's not going to work. It looks really, really good. It's really high quality.
I think this is the year for a lot of people to consider using their computers as their TV devices. Yeah. I mean, just full out, just let's not go with a regular TV set. Let's have a Mac that just works as a TV, because a lot of people are going to be in that position where obviously you got the big honking 42 inch LCD or whatever in the living room. And that's all set. And that's not going anywhere. But this is a chance for you to take, you know, the Sony 19 inch that you bought for your dorm room 8 years ago, you know, that's made three moves already. That is now absolutely not going to work for you when they make the transition to digital.
I agree with you, but I have to say, I'm putting this on the big screen. And it's the way I watch TV now.
No, it works great in any application. But yeah. I'm saying that there are a lot of people who aren't willing to say they aren't willing to turn their big living room TV set into a computer screen.
Right.
But they are certainly willing to say, well, you know what? I got this Quicksilver Mac. I got this older Mac that's in the closet that has a good 19 inch display that I haven't been able to use or haven't been using. I'll use that as my new, as my new kitchen computer, my new kitchen TV or my new bedroom TV. And a box like this I will say that the best digital TV experience that I have ever had continues to be these boxes that you plug into your computer.
Really well. This is the first thing I've seen that's better than a TiVo. And when I go through the program guide, if I press the down arrow on my keyboard, I start scrolling through my channels. Not only do I get the channel, I get what shows on this channel. So, I mean, it's frankly the best experience I've had of watching cable ever. I'm really fond of this thing. I think this is an amazing device, I have to say. I'm
very some of the earlier versions, and it's really, really great. And I might actually have to break down and get cable because of the whole election thing.
Well, you don't, because you live in San Francisco. So all you have to do is get an HDTV antenna.
No, we're on the side of the
it's
hill.
It's really hard to get over the air HD.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah, it looks bad. When you get it, it looks gorgeous. But we're on the side of Knob Hill that is kind of in the radio shadow.
Oh, that's too bad. So, well, then you might have to break down.
Try being west of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, you might have to break down. I would highly recommend this, even if you're on cable. But if you have analog HDTV, this is a fantastic solution to give you, you know, basically full TiVo capabilities. I'll be honest, I was a TiVo bigot. I thought nothing can compete with TiVo. Until I started playing with this, and this thing to me it is better than TiVo. This is the from Elgato, ELGATO. It is the ITV 250 Plus, and it comes with their ITV software. $200, but you're using and you need a computer. I mean, this runs very nicely on my Mac Mini. I've been very happy with it. I think it's a really really good choice. I'm recommending it highly. And I was kind of surprised when I was able to get all these ClearQuem stations that I didn't even know I was paying for. I probably wouldn't have ever known if I hadn't put in the ITV. And I hope Comcast isn't listening. So that's my pick. Let's move along. Andy did his. I did mine. That means it's your turn, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
So I have one that it used to be something that you'd get on the web, but now you don't have to go on the web, and I'm kind of liking it. So it just came out, I believe. This is Pandora. Now, have you guys used Pandora?
Oh, I love Pandora.
So Pandora is really, really cool. And they now have an Air app, and I'm super excited about the Air, you know, Adobe's Air technology. And so basically now what this is it's an application. So you have to download and install Air, but that's worth it. And then after that, you can download Pandora, and it's an Air application, and it's a little standalone now, and you can do the same things that you had before. So what you can do is essentially be playing music and deciding, oh, I like this or I don't like that, or set up channels that are all like, I have one that's like Delamitri, or one that's like Nine Inch Nails, or one that's like, you know, these different things that different bands that I like. And there's a whole, if I just in that mood, I can, you know, keep on telling it what I like and don't like, or things like, you know, and it's just great playing in the background.
It's internet radio, but it's so much smarter.
It's smarter to you.
Right. Cause it listens to what you like, and then clone, you know, kind of crafts a station that's just for you.
It finds stuff. It's just finds songs, and it's very expensive for me to listen to Pandora, because generally what happens is that it finds songs that I haven't thought of for years, or things that I have never heard before that are light, that are enough in the range, and oh, this is something I have to own. And the next thing I know is I'm buying more, you know, more music. So it's expensive in that way. It's
free.
It's free.
But it makes you want stuff.
End result is
it's like this show. It's free, but it makes you want stuff.
The thing is, you can't really save it. You know, that's the whole thing with Pandora. It's kind of going by. So you're like, oh, I got to buy that so that I can listen to it again. So it's pretty nifty. So
I think they recently discontinued their service internationally because of these, you know, restrictions that the music industry wants to put on them. I just love it. We've interviewed the guy who started it, Tim Westergren, I think, on Net at Night. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, it started with the Music Genome Project. It started with this project they got a bunch of professional musicians in listening to music. And the idea was they categorize music by, you know, its genome. So, you know, and what you do is you say, if you say, I like Bob Dylan, they'll go, okay, the genome he likes are acoustic, folky, male singer-songwriters. And then they'll make recommendations based on that. It's better than that, obviously, but that's the idea. It breaks everything you listen down into these genres and then applies that genre to other songs to see what you might like also. Does a good job. Do you think it does a good job, Alex?
I think it does a great job. You know, I mean, especially if you're skipping through it and if you tell it things that you like and don't like.
Right.
You know, if you just sit there and listen to it, it does an okay job. But if you're somewhat active and go, you know, I don't really like that, or I do like that, and you're pretty hard on it, it can zero in pretty accurately, where it gets to a point where I generally enjoy most of the stuff that's going by. It's kind of like dictation software.
There is still Last.fm worldwide, and I think that it's not. It's a little different. Same kind of idea. It's more of a social network than Pandora is.
Right.
I was very sad when it was that whole copyright thing on music, and I think essentially they said we can't afford to do this anywhere outside the U.S., so we're just going to restrict it to the U.S. Just kind of sad. Finally, Merlin Mann, your pick of the day.
I think Andy has already made the Kindle a pick before, probably.
Oh, you love your Kindle.
I'm enjoying my, well, I'm, you know, it's funny. I sat down finally, I started posting again after a little break on 43 folders, and I was starting to write my big Kindle post. And it's funny because for everything that I love about the Kindle, there's two mitigating things that I kind of hate about it. The net result is I'm very excited about it. Although it's, I won't go into a lot of detail except to say that it's much better for some things than others. It's not, reading the Sunday New York Times on the Kindle is not nearly as much fun as holding it in your hands. Mm-hmm. Reading the Atlantic is not as much fun as holding it in your hands. But so depending on how you want to cut this, I either have a pick of the week that's half an Alex or it's zero Alexes. The half an Alex is that if you read a lot and if you read a lot of old books, the Kindle's great.
Yeah.
And now my specific free one, everybody knows that. I want to talk specifically about why and where you can get old books for free. I want to talk about three sources. Because there is something that you probably mentioned this in your article, Andy. I just cannot highly enough recommend Andy's article on the Kindle on his site, which we should put a link to in show notes because it really inspired me to get it. So what's great? Okay, so it's kind of cool. Like you go to Amazon or, you know, it's blah, blah, blah. It's got Ebdo built in. So you can buy books on the fly, which is awesome, right? You're stuck on the tarmac. You can buy a book. Very cool. They're not crazy cheap. They're not like nutty cheap.
Well, it depends what you buy. I mean, if you're buying New York Times bestsellers, $10.
Still, I mean, yeah, it's a third of the cost of the cover.
Yeah.
But I don't find that to be an amazing bargain.
You think they should be cheaper even than that?
I think they should be cheaper even than that. And I think it's, I'll be all Alex here and say, I think it's something where having some kind of an Audible-like model of all you can eat would be a great idea if they could negotiate it. That said, there are so many books that you know in the back of your head you should read, and I'm not going to use that horrible bucket list phraseology, but there's a lot of great books that are worth reading, and there's so many that are free and out there, and people have gone to an extraordinary amount of trouble to make it very easy for you to read them. So I'm going to recommend three things in order of awesomeness, and I'm sure Andy will have others to share. Number one, the big gorilla in this space, obviously, is Project Gutenberg, which is great because you can go in, and there's all kinds of ways you can download in HTML or text versions. It's easy to read on a phone. You can read it on your Trio or what have you. It's not super optimized for the Kindle, but Project Gutenberg has so much stuff at gutenberg.org. What's better, and I have to imagine they're getting some of this stuff from Project Gutenberg, minibooks.net, M-A-N-Y, books, B-O-O-K-S.net, is amazing. It could be a little better taxonomically, but it's got so many fantastic books. I downloaded a John Carter of Mars book I haven't looked at in years. I downloaded Dante's Divine Comedy, all of these wonderful books, hilarious old books, books on housekeeping from the 1800s. What makes this awesome for each one of these
books? You give those to Mad?
Oh, I do. I read them aloud to her. After you've made a good toilet in the morning, you could move about and observe the movements of the servants. Then you go and pay your visits. But anyway, lots of great stuff. Silly stuff, fun stuff. Edgar Rice Burroughs, worth it for the price right there. And the price is free. If you're on a page for Princess of Mars, you select from a dropdown what version you want. You select Kindle, you hit a button, and it downloads to your little computer.
That's cool.
And
you're done. That's really cool.
So that's the second.
So let me ask you how well that conversion goes, because I've been a little nervous about getting non-Kindle books.
Here's the deal. Project Gutenberg is pretty good. PDFs are dicey. I'm going to give you one. My last final secret tip is about PDFs. But PDFs are okay. It's not super well supported. But the beauty part is minibooks.net, it has it in the native whatever M-A-Z-M or whatever.
Oh, it has it in the Kindle format.
No, you literally download the dot, what is it, Andy, dot A-Z-M or something like that?
A-M-Z.
Download it and it's good to go. Now you got two routes.
I like that.
Two routes you can go at this point. You either mail it to your secret Amazon address that sends it straight to your Kindle,
which would be merlinman@kindle.com.
Well, whatever. It's mostly looking at where you're from address.
It actually doesn't matter because,
you're from
you
address.
Can give anyway, it out. Mine's Leo Laporte at kindle.com. It doesn't matter.
Good tip. Good tip. There's two ways you can do that. You can send it right to your Kindle, or you can do the free version where it just sends it back to you as an Amazon book and you upload it yourself. My trick, I wait until I have about five of them that I want to send. I zip them up and then send them. And next time I turn the Kindle on, they're all on there.
So that's one. It costs you for one mailing.
Per attachment.
So one zip. And they know enough to unzip it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You send 50 of them in a zip and it's a dime.
That's excellent.
Which, and I have to tell you the truth, because I'm a big money bags, I'll tell you my tip before I get to this last one. My tip also is what I do is, there's the PDF menu inside the print dialog. Mm-hmm. And so you can pull down, say you're on the print version of a New York Times article you want to read. Say you want to read the awesome Lou Pearlman article in Vanity Fair. You go to the print only page You say PDF, mail this PDF. It throws it in a PDF form over to mail.app because it's a very simple PDF format if it's a print-only page. And that gets sent right to your Kindle. You're good to go. For a dime now, you get to read this article.
And the wrap and everything is fine?
It's not too bad.
Because word wrapping is always a difficult thing to do with PDFs.
Well, and also repeated words sometimes. The PDFs are imperfect. But so finally, and I promise I'm going to shut up after this. This is the money shot. Feedbooks.com. You go to feedbooks.com, which is accessible from your mobile device as well. And there is at feedbooks.com, I believe, /mobile/Kindle. You can download a huge ass Kindle book that contains links to bajillions of books inside that document. So what does that mean? Show me the top 10 downloads right now. Okay, click 1984. Now it's on my Kindle for free.
Because you're just getting it as a download.
It's a huge ass. I mean, one thing to understand about the Kindle that helps it make a lot more sense, learn the back button. The back button is your friend. The Kindle, rather than thinking of it as a book reader, think of it as a book browser.
Wait a minute. Give me the, because I'm getting free Christian educational resources.
Feedbooks.com.
Oh, feedbooks, not free books.
No, feedbooks.
Feed as in F-E-E-D?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If you go to the homepage, I'm guessing there's a link to the Kindle area. But anyway, it downloads this huge ass document. On your Kindle. It's on your homepage now.
You browse that.
Also, get really comfortable when your Kindle. Get comfortable with the search functionality.
Oh, this is cool.
Because once you start using the search functionality, get comfortable with that. The search functionality plus the back button will have you flying all over the place and doing stuff. It's faster than browsing through the homepage. Anyway, so you go and find a book. I want to download Babbitt by Sinclair Lewis. Boom. And it's on your Kindle for free.
Oh, this is fantastic.
So yeah, and you can download, of course, as you know, you can also put Audible books onto your Kindle. You can put MP3s on there. It's not for everybody. It's way too expensive for normal people. But if you got a little
extra, this isn't free.
No. I'm saying the Kindle's expensive.
Oh, the Kindle, this is free. Okay.
It's costly. The Kindle's $350. But I am loving this. And I read my daughter a chapter of Edgar Rice Burroughs every night to put her to sleep.
Which one?
And Princess of Mars.
Really? You think that's appropriate for a young child?
Yeah, I was gonna read her. I was gonna read her Sweeney Todd.
Don't show her the Frank Cho drawings.
Okay,
Deja Thoris as drawn by Frank Cho. We shouldn't
format. But anyway, so I don't know. I'm of course Andy's been quiet through this. I'm sure he'll have opinions as well. But I having that Feedbooks thing on there and with the search functionality really work the search functionality. It's great for dictionary stuff. You can search Wikipedia just by typing a word.
I feel like such a tyro. I've had a Kindle for months, and I'm just buying books.
It's good. And I do it and I want to support that. But, and I bought stuff. Oh, my God. The Jack Handy book. So funny. Bought the latest
on
Jack Handy.
Oh, Jack Handy.
No, I paid $9 for that, but it's
He's
so worth it.
$9. So tell me one more time, because I'm stupid.
Yes.
They do have a help file on here, which I'm looking at. But what you're saying is I don't download the book. I download a search.
Think of it as downloading an HTML document with links to PDFs, metaphorically.
And then I just click the book I want.
Get something in your Kindle. My Kindle's not in front of me right now, but it's, I think it says something like, Kindle Feedbooks book guide or something like that. You surf into that.
Feedbooks.com/Kindle guide.
And once that's on there, you see a link for George Orwell, 1984.
Yeah.
You see Anna Karenina, you see whatever, you click it and you're good to go. It downloads it right to your Kindle for free.
Wow. You're going to save me some money on this one. That's
and there's so many great books. I mean, now, like you said, Bleak House, not my favorite Dickens book, but there's a lot of fantastic books.
What is your favorite Dickens book, just so I can...
I like Oliver Twist. I keep meaning to read Great Expectations, and I haven't.
Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah, sure. But they're all on there. They're all... And books up to and through Freud, there's stuff out there from the early 20th century. Plus, people like Cory Doctorow, who are good enough to put their stuff out there in free-ish formats.
So the guide that you're downloading, which is a .mobi file, that has everything in it?
Links to all of those.
To every book that they have, basically.
At least, though. I believe so.
And then you would update that periodically, I guess.
Last one is from, I think, last month.
Wow.
I believe.
Wow.
Anyway, I want to make sure all three of those are great. If you're at your computer, minibooks.net is fantastic. Obviously, big ups to Project Gutenberg. But having the Feedbooks on your Kindle, it's a game changer.
And I think you're right. I would guess that all of these come from Project Gutenberg because Gutenberg has made such an effort.
They're just repackaging open source. It's
yeah.
no big deal.
And no, it isn't a big deal because that's what Gutenberg's about, is getting this stuff out there. And I think this solves that problem of taking that big text file or PDF and getting on your Kindle was non-trivial. This makes it much easier.
Yeah.
That's great.
What do you think, Andy? You use any of these?
I don't use now Gutenberg. Everybody needs to know about Project Gutenberg because that's the place. They're good people. They're also doing important work. They're taking works that are in the public domain and they're reconceptual. They're recontexting them into a way that everybody can think that they're relevant. They take books that otherwise would be dead or only be available and of interest to grad students, which is as good as being dead, creatively speaking. And they make it just as vibrant as any other electronic book that's out there. I mean, there are all kinds of humorists who were just kicking butt and taking names in the 1870s and 1880s. And you read them, and so many of them are just as fresh as today. Now,
You read Jonathan Swift. Go further. You read A Modest Proposal today. It is still...
I mean, let's be honest. There are a lot of them where the style of text, you can smell the mustache wax with every paragraph. But otherwise, they are really great. What surprises me, what I would not have guessed after my second week using the Kindle, is how many actual books I'm buying through the Kindle store. My review, which I think I wrote after about 2 or 3 weeks with it, said that, yes, it's nice that you can buy books at the Kindle store. But the real meat of this is that it has a really great mobile web browser. It's great for using Google Reader in for basically being the electronic book that you read every single blog on, because you just, type in the URL for Google Reader, the mobile edition. You can catch up on thousands and thousands and thousands worth of pages of really cool, really interesting, really current things you have to read anyway because you're a tech geek. And it costs you nothing for life because the internet service is always free.
And it feels snappy. Yet, I think it's the Java that feels logy, but the connection's pretty snappy.
Exactly. There have been plenty of times over the past few months where I just had an interest in a certain book. And so I just wanted to see, well, how much is it on Amazon so that when I get home, maybe I'll actually buy it. So I've got the Kindle nearby. I look for it on the Kindle store. I see this $24.95 as paperback. It's $10 on the Kindle store. So, well, and then you push one button and you can download the first chapter or two. And then you read the first couple chapters, which takes you a couple hours maybe. And then you actually want to see what comes next. So it suddenly makes sense to spend $10 to have it. And now that's sort of my default position when buying current in-print books. I mean, books that I read just for pleasure. I tend to buy them off the Kindle store. And after I finish them, if I think that they're so good that I actually want to add them to the permanent and not go archives, then I'll send out for the paperback version. Or if it's in hardcover, I'll wait for the paperback to come out and then buy that. It is a very plain sort of reading experience, but it took me surprisingly little time to get used to the experience of reading this 300-500 page book just by tapping a button
Andy, Ninja Move that I'm sure you're doing already, this is huge, and people apparently aren't doing this. Samples, you can go get the free beginning of
it's
the
really
book
really great yeah
which is if you go and like who was I talking to I was talking to my friend Rob Testman yesterday. We were talking about this. He's like, you're getting ready to go on a plane, go and grab 15 or 20 of these free I think they're unlimited. I don't know if there's a limitation.
No, I don't think there's a limit. I get a bunch of them.
I did that with the Jack Handy book, and I loved it.
And then you say, if I like this, I'm going to get some more of it.
And you don't have to leave the page.
Right.
Like, it doesn't replace it. You do get two copies, which is a little janky. But there's a link right there. At the point where the text ends, you ready to buy this? Yes. Boom.
Isn't that great? Hey, we got to wrap this up. This is rapidly getting to be another
I've been 2 hours, Leo.
I try every time.
Leo, 1 hour since you said, gee, we didn't seem to have much to talk about this week. Oh, well, yeah, exactly. See you next week.
You know what gets us every time on this show? And maybe we should just eliminate the news and just do the picks, because the picks we end up spending an hour on. And they're great. I'm not saying we shouldn't.
Make it two shows a week.
Maybe it'll have to be two shows. Maybe we'll divide it up.
Cut it into two episodes.
Yeah, I could do that. We could just that's do
it. You look nice
Mac
today.
MacBreak picks.
Is that how you do? You look nice today. You record for 8 hours and then you say how many shows you're going to get out of it?
Drink, talk for 3 hours, and then Sandwich works for 2 days, cutting it up into two episodes.
Sandwich works hard.
He's a hardworking man.
That is that's basically why we do the way we do, which is really cut and run, record it and get it out the door. Cause otherwise you spend days. This stuff is a lot of work. All right. Well, I want to thank you guys. You're the best. Do listen to, You Look Nice Today. YouLookNiceToday.com. Simply
not safe for work,
but simply the funniest thing. I'm not gonna say the funniest podcast. I'm gonna say the funniest thing anywhere. It is really great. A must listen. Merlin is the star of that, along with Scott Simpson and Lonely Sandwich.
I feel like if you take a fart joke and add a Voltaire reference, it really takes it.
That's really a very good description of it. It's exactly what it is. it's bathroom humor, but in kind of by aesthetes.
Well, it's bathroom humor with a master's degree.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's a good slogan. Of course, you can catch all the great work that Mr. Alex Lindsay does, soon to be a Petalumen, I think. We're going to turn this into a media center.
Exactly.
You
exactly.
and me alone.
Yeah, it's right there, you know.
Go to pixelcore.com. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to know where Alex lives. You just have to know where to find him on the net. Pixelcore.com. And for the podcast, pixelcore.tv. This Week in Photography, excellent.
And I'm on Twitter.
Oh, Hot Dogs Ladies is Merlin on Twitter. Alex is Alex Lindsay on Twitter. Andy is, are you Andy Inotko or Andy I?
I am Inotko on Twitter. Make it as difficult to spell as I possibly can.
I have no idea how to spell Inotko. I-H-N-A-T-K-O.
Correct.
And Andy, of course, is also online at CWOB.com. I'm Leo Laporte on Twitter. Broke 40,000 last night.
Woohoo! I was wondering, now we were talking about that, and I hadn't gone up to Twitterholic for a while. And I was wondering.
Now that Barack Obama is the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, I can safely say I have more Twitter followers. but Kevin Rose is...
You know what? I think he should start talking to you about, there's a VP position.
I think I should be VP.
You have this following that he has
you're
to
ready.
Be
You're ready from
to.
Day one.
I'm ready to sit down and tweet from the Oval Office.
Yeah, exactly.
Screw him. He'll be the VP. I think Twitter should be like, that's how you vote.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I hope that's not followers. True.
The people have spoken. It's me and Kevin Rose going to run the country. Oh, that is scary.
I just got beaten by CNN. CNN just took me
what? Over. How dare they? They're coming back?
Oh, that's okay. I got all the followers I need. I don't need any more. No, because then people read the bar is raised. I'm lowering expectations.
I can't tell you. You think you're being silly. You're absolutely right. I now have complete writer's block. I think every time I say something, 40,000 people are going to see it. That's completely clammed me up.
You know, for me, it's not about the number of followers. It's about the amount of value and service that I can give to the people who've entrusted this time during the day towards following my 140 character tweets. It's a covenant.
God bless you. God bless you, Andy, for your important work. God bless you.
God's following me on Twitter. I know he's on my side.
That's over her. I totally created the universe.
That's, by the way, twitter.com/the god as opposed to the phony god. Make sure you follow the right God.
Totally different guy. I don't believe me. Totally different guy.
He and Stephen Colbert. I think what major magazine thought that Stephen Colbert on Twitter was the real Stephen Colbert, and then they had to issue a retraction. All right, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in about 5 minutes with the with hours 5 and 6 of Mac Break Weekly. You may
remember.
Now.
Unless we can raise more money this year than last year, there's just no reason to keep doing these telethons, people. It's 2 a.m. We're here working for you. Where's your phone calls?
Another Mac Break is broke.